This is the Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is episode 286, and our From the Outside In topic is a doozy. It's our fall television preview. Very extended, very long. It's going to be very enjoyable, I hope. Latest in movie and TV news, including some interesting Halloween news. We're going to discuss the recent anniversaries of Fatal Attraction and The Princess Bride. We're going to review American Vandal and Darren Aronofsky's Mother, which I'll dive a little bit deeper into after our normal show is over. Be sure to get the Hole in the Go with our Apple or Android apps. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, where reviews are appreciated, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow hosts, Scotty Clark.
How the hell are you, Aaron?
I am good. I am really, really good. How about you, Scott?
I am so tired. It's not even funny, man. I've basically been running on fumes ever since school started, and I don't know where my energy is coming from. Yes, I do. It's coming from Taco Bell. I'm chalupaed up and ready to go, man. Let's make this happen.
Are you like getting paid for them? Is it like a Taco Bell? That's 2 weeks in a row. Are you getting?
I wish I would, man. If I could get one of those cards that gives me like Taco Bell like once every week for free, dude, I would be all over that.
You need help. All right, and Johnny Davenport returning back. What's going on, Johnny?
Oh, man, I got to tell you, it's kind of relieving to finally be back on the show and not be avoiding Geostorm in real life. It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Are you going to go watch that movie and be like, this is a documentary?
God, no, I'm not going to put myself through that again.
How did you like being right in the path of a hurricane? A little freaky?
It's a little freaky. I've been through several. That's part of living through Florida, but this is the first time, like, something for me, this is the first time that something this big looked like it was going to be going right over my head, which fortunately for us and unfortunately for a few people in our state, it didn't end up going right over our head, but it did just barely miss us as far as the nastiness go. And it was a doozy. I ended up running to Georgia and getting hit by Irma there. And that's where I had to live without power for 6 hours. And then when we're trying to make our way home from after the aftermath of Irma, it was like trying to avoid Negan. We'd go down one road. And it's like trees are on fire and toppled over, go down another road. There's a guy like, you know, looking at us funny and with a baseball bat in his hand. Yeah, it was good times.
That never happened. Or did it happen?
All right. Maybe I'm embellishing a little bit.
Maybe you drove by the set of Walking Dead is really all you did. You just took a wrong turn. And he's like, what? You're not supposed to be on this road, jackass. That's why he's holding the bat out.
The toppled over trees and electric lines all over the place, that part really happened. The guy with the baseball bat, not so much. That's really the set of Walking Dead in Georgia.
So I got to ask you, because I just know the little I know about Florida from hearing you and some other friends from Florida talk and how crazy the people are. Like how often did the Scorpions get played on the radio or blasted from people's car stereos?
Nah, it doesn't. That's not the thing. It's like when hurricane comes, everyone's a lot, you know, goes into this weird chill mode. And
chill
they just,
mode.
Oh, it's weird because, you know, when you're about to fall, you kind of get all rubbery and loose and before you hit the ground just so that you can absorb the hit. People take on that mentality when a storm's coming. They get nice and drunk. They have all of their friends come over and stay safe with them. A big barbecue's happening. That's usually how it happens.
That's just Florida all the time, though, isn't it? It's not just...
No, it's amplified when a storm comes.
I just want to go on the record that when I fall, I don't do that. That's why I get injured.
I don't either. I wish I did. I tense up like crazy.
Yeah. Ow! That's all I say when I hit the ground. Ow! It's my mouth.
Floridians get all rubbery because we're usually drunk when it happens.
All right, let's get into some movie and TV news and get past whatever the hell that was. Jamie Lee Curtis is returning to the Halloween franchise next year. I'm kind of curious in this, and not just to go back, because we talked about Halloween and how Danny McBride's involved in this, but how do you guys feel about, because she died. She's dead. Not a spoiler alert. She died in Resurrection. How do you feel about dead characters being retconned back into a franchise?
I'm not surprised by this happening at all, because when we have talked about it, the number one thing we always talk about is how much you hate Danny McBride. And then we go into what is going on with the story, which in this story, they've come out and said that because they feel like the first two movies were scarier than the entire series all put together. Because in those two movies, Michael Myers is just a crazy guy, and he could be technically anybody under that mask killing people. But when they started going into this whole supernatural aspect of Michael Myers is when they lost Danny McBride and his writing partner. So I'm not surprised they're doing this. And it was going to be a retcon to begin with. They're basically saying everything from after two is gone. It didn't happen. And I don't know. Well, let's see what goes.
It was like 3 minutes and you didn't even answer my question. How do you feel about retconning dead characters? How do you feel about
them? You just basically confirmed his question. Yeah, that is exactly what you asked, Aaron. What would you like to discuss?
All right. Let's answer it a different way then. I don't care if they're retconning it when it comes to this property and then bringing back a dead character. I don't care with this property.
But that means they're going to retcon H2O as well, right? Which I thought was a really good Halloween movie.
Yeah, it is really good. But they are going to retcon it. Anything that That's happened stupid. After number two is non-existent to these guys.
Man, I love Jamie Lee Curtis. This is dumb. It's dumb. She already came back.
Disagree.
What's that?
I disagree.
Oh, well,
I really think
well,
it,
tell
I really
us.
Disagree. Huh?
I said, well, tell us, Spicy Scott. How do you disagree?
I disagree because I think it makes sense for this to retroactive retcon. Continuity. Is that what it stands for?
Wow. Yes. Look at you. Look at the big brain on, bro.
Well, I had never heard that phrase before we did this podcast. So like I had to make sure I learned it right. So anyway, Michael Myers, like the original movies were about her. Yes, he killed other people, but the obsession was her. Like that's what it always was. Even all the way up to H2O, it was her. Everything else that everybody else got killed were people that got in the way from him getting to her. So trying to resurrect the Halloween series without her, it doesn't make any sense. What's his motivation? I'm picturing Michael Myers like saying, "What's my motivation?" no. But I mean, seriously, you've got to go back and do it. You can't have Halloween without her, without Laurie.
Yes, you can. Michael Myers can be without Laurie Strode. You can have Jason Voorhees without Tommy. You can have them. They're characters, and they're iconic characters, and they're murderers. People want to watch them kill things. Now, I get it's a draw because the most successful Halloween movies happen to have Jamie Lee Curtis in it. I totally get it. But you already retconned 4 and 5 with H2O. You already did that. And now you're going to do it again? And after
what do you want him to do? You want him just to have a whole new character that he's obsessed with?
How about you come up with a new damn idea? That would be cool. I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't any, but how about a new idea? How about something where you can retcon some of that stuff, but not with Jamie Lee Curtis? And it's not – I love Jamie Lee. In Scream Queens, she was fabulous, man. I love her to death. I think doing this for the character is idiotic. And as much as I love Halloween, I just find this idiotic. It's a dumb idea to me. And man, you already did it once. How many times do you get to retcon a retcon? Is that like a retcon? What is that?
Something like waiting all day DJ to say scratching. That.
It's a retcon. I don't know. All right. I still don't think John answered the question yet.
I don't think so either.
I think my answer sums it up that I actually have no feelings of it. Let these guys do whatever they want. I can't even guarantee I'm going to go see the movie full stop.
Oh, I'll see it.
That's my answer.
I'm a total sucker.
That's the thing. It's Aaron Will. Yeah,
you're going to hate watch it. You're going to be like, that's these sons of bitch fucking Danny McCroy.
If he's in it, you know what? Knowing him, he'll probably star as Michael Myers. That's probably what he'll do.
Now, you hate Danny McBride so much.
Dislike. I don't hate him. I dislike him.
Well, he's not Miles Teller, but like you do not like this guy a lot. But do you really hate the writing and stuff that he's done? Because he's done other things besides acting and acting like an idiot. Like, are you having a problem with his writing as well? Or
yes,
is it just the bad,
yes,
the acting?
Yes, his writing. The only writing really that he has exhibited is stuff that he wrote for himself primarily. And those things have not been exceptional to me. Eastbound and Down was fine. Vice Principals has its moments. But a lot of that, I think, is the performance by, you know, my wet dream Walton Goggins. So I don't really know if I don't think he's a great writer. He's fine. I mean, I don't think he's a bad writer. I think he's fine. It could be a fine movie. We've already had lots of fine Halloween movies. How about we get a freaking great one for once? That would be cool. And I don't think we're going to get a great one from Danny McBride. That's what I think.
Okay.
Does that hurt you?
No, I just, I've always understood the dislike for Danny McBride because of some of the acting that he did. What was that movie with This Is the End or whatever? He annoyed the crap out of me in that movie. I just could not wait until his scenes were over. I get that. But
my dislike for him is the exact same as my dislike for Miles Teller. They are average performers at best, and they are the same thing in everything they do. And not in the way that Samuel L. Jackson is the same way in everything you do, where everybody is freaking amazing being Samuel L. Jackson. No, they're just average. And that means that they're average in everything that they do. And he never leaps out as anything more than just adequate to me. And I'm sure he's a very nice fella. It's just a matter of I haven't really got excited. The only thing I really, really loved him in was that the one we saw with Jesse Eisenberg and Aziz Ansari. What was that? I don't remember the name of that movie, but it was a real low budget one they did a few years back. That one, I really liked that. But he was the same character in that one too. He's always the same guy. He's just that guy. You know who else is always that guy? Liam Neeson. Yeah. He's apparently been that guy for about, well, ever since Taken came out, and he reignited his career with an action hero stance, a middle-aged or later-aged action hero stance. And now he's saying he's retiring from action flicks. How do you guys, Scott, how do you feel about Liam Neeson retiring from action flicks?
What took so long? I mean, that sounds meaner than it is because, like, hey, if Tom Cruise can do it, you can too. I get that mentality, but maybe since like the first Taken movie, I haven't like just loved an action movie he did. Oh, the Gray was pretty good. I did like that. But I honestly prefer seeing the actor side of him than the action star. I mean, I'm not saying I want another Love Actually, but I do want another Love Actually, but I'm not looking for that. But when he is actually acting his ass off on screen, I'm actually more compelled by him than I am when he's being an action star. And I don't know, maybe that's a personal preference, but I just want to see more acting instead of action from him. And if that's what's going to take, then I'm on board. But on the bright side, we do get one more action flick out of him because that movie Hard Powder, which I've never heard of until tonight. Have you seen the premise for this movie?
It's the one where he's a snow truck driver?
He's a snow plow driver. Who takes revenge on like drug dealers that killed his son or something. You know how he's going to take revenge on them, right? It's got to be. At least please. Like let him do something with a snowplow. I don't know. That sounds fantastic. And the name Hard Powder.
It's like a Deadpool style kill revenge flick where he's just like on a Zamboni and riding around. Same thing with a snowplow.
I just like Hard Powder. They try to make snow sound tough. Like it's not a big ball of fluff. Hard Powder.
It sounds more like a skiing movie. At some point, is he going to ski down a mountain? That feels more like a skiing movie.
Who knows?
Or like a ski porn.
No. Oh Jesus! You went there.
Sorry,
wasn't me.
Yeah,
wasn't me this time either.
Sorry.
My hands are above the table right now.
Hand check.
Oh boy, yeah. So I'm with you. Actually, I miss him doing real roles.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I'm just getting tired of seeing him do action, just because he's right up there with Harrison Ford as far as mobility goes. Like.
Well, he can see the fence in seven cuts, man. What are you talking about?
Well, right. But you see the guys move. You see them run. I mean, they don't look like they run. They kind of hobble and they kind of throw themselves in a direction and hope they don't fall on their face. I don't want to see that in action movies or I don't want to play my favorite game when it comes to some actors. Is that the actor or is that a stunt double? Especially when it comes to Liam Neeson, because you can always figure out, oh, look, he just shrunk a foot. Now he's a foot taller again and he shrunk a foot again. It's just, yeah, Liam Neeson needs to retire.
All right. Well, I think we settled that one. We're all in agreement. Please share the show on your social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, whatever it is that you use. It really does help the show. If you enjoy this podcast, please share it. And we're going to get into a lot of TV. So get ready. It's our fall TV preview right now. And to do that, I want to introduce Kyle Nolan from NoReruns.net. Kyle, can you tell people who you are and what is NoReruns.net?
My name is Kyle Nolan, and NoReruns.net is my TV-related blog where I post news stories, reviews, interviews. Like all my videos from Comic-Con press rooms are up there. I did some set visits in the past, so that stuff's up there. Just anything TV related or home video related that I post on there.
You do a lot of interviews with many of the talent from our favorite shows, including Sean and Gus from Psych. And I want to know, did you happen to mention that I'm still mad at them for canceling their Wizard World appearance? Because
I only found out about that after the fact when Troy told me, ooh, Aaron's going to be upset that you got to talk to them and he didn't.
Yeah.
As long as they didn't cancel Wizard World to do the interview with you, I don't think you'd be here.
It would be amazing. If that were the case. You would hear an ejection sound.
You invited me on just to eject me.
Yes. Are they really nice guys? I mean, did you touch them?
Everyone was really nice. That whole cast was a lot of fun.
I didn't ask about everyone, Kyle. I asked about Sean and Gus. I asked about James Rodet and Dulé Hill. Do they smell nice? Are they pretty?
I did not sniff them, but they were friendly, yes.
All right. God. Well, you can go to NoReruns.net and watch the interview that he had with them that I have not had. So congratulations on that. I mean, that's cool.
Well, you know, I have a question to ask. So it sounds like Kyle does some really cool stuff with TV, and he actually he's actually kind of important and stuff. What's he doing to hanging out with a couple of Yahoos like us?
It's community service, I guess.
Good answer.
Wow. That tells us a little bit about you. Got to put in some time, huh? Yeah. They ran out of garbage on the side of the road, so you had to go do some charity podcasting.
We appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah.
No problem.
Okay, before we get into the fall TV, which is, you know, the crux of this episode, really, I want to talk a little bit about some quick Emmy bits. One, I want to mention that Veep won Best Comedy, big surprise, and The Handmaid's Tale became the first streaming series to win Best Drama, which is, I think, is fantastic. It beat Netflix and Amazon, and Black Mirror won for Best Television Movie, which really makes no sense, so I don't quite understand it. And then Lena Waithe became the first black woman to win for comedy writing on Master of None, and I think Donald Glover was the first black director to win. So a lot of cool stuff. I'm kind of curious, did The Handmaid's Tale really surprise anybody? Because it's only 8 episodes that it won Best Drama.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen it, but I've heard John talk about it, but... As much as everybody's been talking about it and how high quality it is and how it's just kind of off-putting and getting people really talking about it, I'm not that surprised. I'm actually really happy that a streaming television show made it.
I'm not surprised by it either because of the quality of the show. It is very much like movie quality. But what I think is actually more important to look at is of the 7 nominated shows for Best Drama, 4 of them came from streaming services. So to me, that tells me that it's a huge like battle cry for streaming services and what they have to give, you know?
It's a good point. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you guys. Like, I've seen most of the first season of that show, and I really enjoyed it. I just lost track. Otherwise, I would have finished it. And I do mean to get back to it. But I wasn't surprised at all that it got nominated or that it won. It was one of my favorites out of the list. Which, of course, Westworld should have won.
We know that.
Right? That was going to be my next question. Why did Westworld come away empty-handed?
It sure did. Yeah.
That's a travesty right there.
Nothing to see here.
It looks like nothing to me.
I'm curious, Aaron, why were you so surprised by the Black Mirror thing? Is it up against something else you thought was more deserving? Or are you just
best, calling it a TV movie?
TV movie. It's a series, for crying out loud. I don't get how they do this. And they do the same thing with like American Horror Story. Oh, well, it's an anthology. No, it's not. It's on every year. It's a series.
No, but those are completely separate stories. I understand. I don't like how they treat Sherlock as like 3 separate movies or Black Mirror as whatever number of separate movies. But I understand the other ones being in like miniseries or because they are the American Horror Stories are completely separate.
Well, I can't really argue with the guy that interviewed Sean and Gus. So, all right. You win. Fine.
It's kind of like how the Golden Globes sandwiches whatever they can in the whatever slot they can, like some stupid movie being a comedy versus it actually being a drama or something like that.
Yeah, anything that's like 30 minutes is considered a comedy, even though it may be a drama.
That's interesting.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus, by the way, won, I think, most Emmys in one particular role. I think she set a record for that, which is another cool thing.
I think, has she won every single year for Veep, like all 6 years it's aired?
Probably. I'm sure there's people wanting to cut her in the parking lot, I can tell you that.
I need to watch that show, apparently. I'm nervous to watch it because the trailers are like, you know how, I think that at least one season of Game of Thrones, Veep was on right after it, so I was always seeing the like previously on Veep or what's coming up, and it just never struck me, and I'm always leery about trying new HBO shows because I've got this perfect record of HBO shows. Every HBO show I've watched, I've loved or adored, And I'm afraid to jinx that by having one that isn't for me. But man, six Emmys. That's I think it's time for me to give it a shot.
I almost hope that she wins next year, just to, because that's the final season. Just get Queen it sweep. All 7 seasons and just be done with it.
Well, Veep has a pretty cool pedigree, as it's made by the same, it's created by the same guy who did In the Loop, and I forget the name of the series that In the Loop is based off of. But it's an English show, and it has all the same hallmarks of that English show, and it's hysterical. And that's the one where Peter Capaldi spent the last few years before he became the Doctor. So it's pretty fun seeing that whole connection.
You know, my favorite part of the Emmys was watching the 9 to 5 reunion. They had a 9 to 5 reunion. Congratulations to those ladies. And Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin were trying to get all politically rude to a certain candidate. And Dolly Parton, because she obviously leans the other way, like turned it right back around and just like, I'm not having that on my time. So that was my favorite moment of the whole show.
And then she talked about vibrators.
You know what? She won those girls back. That's what she was doing. She's like, you know what? I'm not going to do this political crap. We're getting right back on track, and we're going to talk about vibrators. And I also love
that they're doing the award for best supporting actress, and she makes some comment about, well, I sure know something about support.
That's great.
Oh, it was funny.
She just seems like such a sweet, sweet person.
I got one more question about the Emmys just before we move on, because obviously Game of Thrones was not in contention here because the show aired a bit too late to be for this season.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you think that was intentional so that it's their next? We don't know when the final season of Game of Thrones is. It hasn't been really announced yet. But is that all going to be marketing so that they can, in their minds, they're going to win that next Emmy season right before the final season comes out and everybody's talking about it and they can pad those numbers even more?
Kyle?
It's possible.
What do you think, Kyle?
I would doubt. I if they could have started the season earlier, I think they would have started the season earlier. I think they just didn't have it ready in time. Because look what happened to that other movie. What's it called? The one with Riz Ahmed. Like, that thing aired almost over a year ago. And since it didn't line up for last year, like, I think it would have won a whole bunch of awards over Big Little Lies, or if it had been close to when it actually aired. Because I think people forgot about it.
The Night Of?
Yeah, the Night Of. Yeah.
Okay. You're absolutely right. That really should have won something, but I can see how it got totally overshadowed.
Hmm. Well, I mean, that sounds an interesting idea, Scott, but I really don't think they do it based on the Emmys. But it's, you never know. You never know anymore. I don't know what they're doing.
It's not like HBO's AMC and purposely breaking up their seasons so they can fit on both tiers.
They don't care. We got our money, sucker. All right. Well, you guys ready to talk about some fall TV?
Yes, sir.
Yep. Let's do it.
The excitement is palpable. All right. Well, we're going to talk about our favorites and of the new and returning shows. We're going to hopefully tell you. So get some paper ready, get a pen ready, and we're going to let you know networks, dates for the new shows that you might not have even heard about. And then the returning shows, you might have to figure some of those out. We'll let you know when we get there. But these are going to be choices from any series coming out this fall, regardless of network, cable, streaming, whatever. Where in the past, it's been mostly network-focused. That's just not the model anymore. So we're opening up to whatever. You guys ready to get into this? Let's get into it. What are the top 2 or 3 shows that you guys are most excited for this fall? We'll go round robin, which means 3, 2, 1. Scott, you start off.
All right. The first one I want to talk about is this show on Fox called Ghosted that's coming up. And I think the first time I heard about this show was back when The Orville was announced. It was like they were like right back to back or something. Mm-hmm. The way that I would describe this show is it looks like if X-Files starred a couple of comedians instead of Gillian Anderson and David Duchovny. It's a skeptic is forced to work with a firm believer of the paranormal or unexplained occurrences in Los Angeles. And it stars Craig Robinson and Adam Scott. This looks like my kind of humor. It just looks hilarious. And I'm excited that I want to watch something on network TV again. That one, again, is on Fox on Sunday, October 1st. At 8:30. I assume that is Eastern time. I can't confirm. I have to do some more research, but wow. Yeah, these are all Eastern time.
Scott brought times. Look at that. He went the extra mile.
Yes, sir.
Man, I was just going to say, go to noreruns.net and he'll have the schedule up.
Do have a grid up with all of the, but it's all in Eastern time. I don't, or Eastern and Pacific. I don't, I don't know your crazy Central.
Central.
Which is so convenient. I wish I was on Central Time because you can finish it like a show at like Primetime ends at 10 and then you can start watching yet another Primetime show and from 10 to 11 that you already recorded. It's so convenient.
Yeah, you guys are done at 11.
I can tell you how many times I recorded this show wishing I was in Central Time, just being like, I got to go to bed sometime.
This might be one of those nights, Chico.
Yeah.
All right, Johnny, you're up.
All right, the first one I'm most excited about is Mindhunter. It's on Netflix October 13th. It stars Jonathan Groff, Holt McNally, and I can't wait to see her back in something, Anna Torv. It's based off the book Mindhunter, which is an inside look at the FBI's beginning of the behavioral analysis unit. And it looks dark, it looks moody, and it has an awesome subject matter about people learning how to hunt serial killers. It really like triggers something in the deep, dark recesses of that place I call a heart, and I'm really interested in seeing it.
When's it come out?
That's October 13th.
On Netflix. David Fincher's behind that. Did you know that?
Yes, I did.
Okay. That gets me excited because this is a TV project he's had in the works forever. And I'm kind of curious to see how dark he goes. Because, I mean, you're talking the creator of Seven, and he's back in serial killer land. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Network, though, right?
Oh, it's Netflix. Netflix.
Oh, okay, then he can get away with some stuff there.
Yeah.
Yeah, John picks everything on streaming because he doesn't have cable anymore.
It can't be his favorite if he can't watch it.
That's right.
I mean, I gotta say, am I gonna spend $3 to watch this, or am I gonna see it on Netflix? I don't know.
All right, Kyle, what's your first pick?
So my first pick is 10 Days in the Valley, which is going to be on ABC on October 1st. Kira Sedgwick returns television, and this time she's playing like a TV writer, producer of a cop show. And so as she's dealing with this, like problems on the set of the cop show, she's also dealing with a divorce, and then she has a bit of a drug problem, and her daughter gets kidnapped, and now it becomes like this mystery of who kidnapped the daughter. And since it's 10 Days in the Valley, it's only a 10-episode series, and each episode will be one day of time of this, what's going on. And it also stars Erica Christensen, Malcolm Jamal Warner, and the guy who played Mr. Echo on Lost. He plays like the main investigator. Oh, wow. Looking into this. But I think this show is very Aaron friendly. Like, this sounds like something that you would watch with like The Sinner and like all these other like small mystery type of thing. By the end of like the pilot, they have 5 or 6 different people that all could have done it, and they all have different motivations and questionable stories, and so they really set it up nicely to get you to continue to watch.
Because you did see the pilot, right?
I've seen the first 2 episodes of this one. Yep.
And did you say Theo Cosby is in this?
He is. Yep.
What's that dude been up to?
He was on whatever. Wasn't he on Psych for a while?
Was he on Psych?
Thought he was on Psych. He was on some other
Suits.
Show.
I know. He was on Suits.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. I didn't know he was still doing anything.
Yeah, man. He was really good on Suits too. He played I don't want to say because then it'll spoil for people that aren't caught up. It ain't my fault you're a season behind. But yeah, he was on Suits. So it's 10 episodes and that's it, right? It's not a comeback for another season, or
it's not supposed to, but who knows, like with any of these things. But I mean, they could come up with a new mystery, like this time it's looking for her daughter. They could come up, like, she's a TV writer, they could write some other story and some other thing happens to her. So I think she might have been a cop before she became a TV writer, so she's writing about some old cases, and some of that comes in like questionable, like people are upset that she's sharing stories they told her, like some of her informants and things. So there's a lot of, they could build this world out and do a second story if they wanted to.
Excellent. I'm definitely, that was on my list, so thanks for knocking that off. All right, so which means I gotta delete that. All right, well, my first one then is gonna be The Punisher on Netflix, coming out in November. And I know some people are like, wow, you just love Marvel shows. No, I don't. I really haven't loved many.
Yeah, you don't.
No.
The ones I'll agree with that.
Thank you. And Luke Cage couldn't even finish it. Iron Fist, you know, I felt like I was getting fisted half the time. The Daredevil, I didn't like season two except for The Punisher, but I love Jessica Jones. Defenders was just kind of average. The Punisher, I am so excited. I love the character, always have. I don't know how they're going to do a TV show because he's not exactly, you know, he's not a hero. I mean, he's a vigilante. He's a murderer. He has some heroic qualities, but he is far from a hero. And it's going to be on Netflix in November. And this is one of those shows that was actually spawned because of fan love. Like, the fans loved the character in Daredevil so much, they near demanded that this become a series. And what it is, it's a former Marine out to punish the criminals responsible for his family's murder. And then he finds himself ensnared in a military conspiracy. I don't like military conspiracy. That always makes me nervous because you never know what they're going to do with that. But it's got John Bernthal. It's got Ben Barnes and Deborah Ann Wall from Daredevil. She plays Karen on Daredevil. She's actually going to be on this. And Tyler Bates is scoring the entire series, who did the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 score, the John Wick score. I love his music. Just there's nothing about it that doesn't sound awesome, and it's coming out in November. So that's my first one.
That's pretty awesome. Do you know if they're doing like a short season? Like they?
No, 13 episodes. Defenders? 13. Okay. Yep, 13.
I wish they would cut down these Marvel shows because they seem to run out of ideas by the end of each season.
Or you know what they're doing, which I don't agree with, is that every season is like one major villain. So the entire episode, the entire season is just like one super long movie, which I get. Some people love that. I don't. I feel like that drags it out sometimes when you have 13 episodes. Maybe, you know, make it more of a background thing where the villain is there, but really each episode is more self-contained than they currently are.
Two 6 or 7 episode arcs. And
yeah, that's fine too.
That's your season.
Yeah,
that would be. Well, I mean, the first season of Daredevil kind of did it right when it had the guy from The Hand and that one battle where he lit the guy on fire, mm-hmm. which that was pretty much a villain that he went up after. And then after that, it became all about even more about Kingpin. So I think they broke it up with a gradual progression of different villains, from Turk to Russians to the guy from The Hand to then Kingpin. I think they did that right the first season of Daredevil.
I agree. But
John Bernthal is, I'm not afraid to say, I don't like the Punisher. I hate the Punisher. I hate the character as far as being a comic book hero.
Well, he hates you too.
Huh? Wait, hold on.
All right.
I'll watch the shit out of John Bernthal play the Punisher. He made me care. He made me like him. I'm interested in seeing how he plays the character. It's the first time that's ever happened, and I'm thrilled to see that happening.
That fight in Daredevil season 2, that prison fight with Punisher, mm-hmm. one of the best orchestrated fights I've ever seen in a television show. Just mm-hmm. phenomenal. And I'm including the Daredevil, was it the hallway scene or whatever?
The hallway fight.
I'm including that one. I thought it was just brutal, honest. To me, that's how real people fight. So I was like, yeah, that's like a street fight. I mean, that's how he fights. And I want, man, 13 episodes of that and he's just killing people. Yeah, I can get into that. Sure. All right, Scotty, we're back to you. Number two.
My number two is a show that I actually didn't hear about until today, but I read the premise and I think it sounds awesome. It's called Me, Myself, and I. It comes on CBS on Monday, September 25th at 9:30. This is a comedy that examines one man's life over a 50-year span. And what's cool is he's actually played by three different actors. It explores three distinct periods in his life as a 14-year-old man or 14-year-old kid in 91. He's played by Jack Dylan Grazer at that point. A 40-year-old in present day, played by Bobby Moynihan, and a 65-year-old in 2042 by John Larroquette. Hmm. I thought this whole thing I just loved the idea. And that's my kind of story. I just love this, like seeing from different perspectives, seeing different ages. And also, Urkel's supposed to make an appearance in this one, too. I haven't seen Jaleel White in anything for a long time, so I'm just kind of curious to see what they're going to do with him.
Yeah, he was in Psych.
He was in Psych as well? I apparently just have to watch Psych and see everybody I want to see from the 80s.
This one was on my list. I really enjoyed this one. Jaleel White, he plays like his best friend at the Bobby Moynihan age, the middle story. But yeah, I really enjoy this. I like how they do a good job of like tying the theme of the three stories. Like they cut back and forth between all three stories, and they do a good job of tying them together theme-wise of what's going on.
Gotcha.
You know, I'm not afraid to say this, and I think I'm speaking for Aaron on this too, but you kind of have me at John Larroquette.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
That's what I kind of assumed with Aaron too.
You got Dan Fielding involved. I'm probably going to watch it.
That's right.
Yep. I love Dan Fielding. I wish they couldn't even come close to making that character work today. All right.
No, they really couldn't.
Johnny, what about you? What's number two?
My number two is, you know, I'm both excited about it, but expecting it to be kind of a train wreck, which is going to be Law & Order True Crime. It's going to be on NBC Tuesday, September 26th. And it's really NBC and Law & Order's stab at trying to make like the FX series about OJ. But instead of doing OJ, they're doing the Menendez brothers, which was pretty prevalent through the 90s. It's a story about two brothers who ended up killing their parents and then the court case that ensued after that. It stars Chris Bauer, Sterling Bowman, Edie Falco, and Dominic Flores. Like I said, I'm a little guarded with it because it is Law & Order, which on NBC, which is like at this point, gentrified true crime. It's supposed to be set up for everybody as opposed to being hard hitting and just really nail you with what crime can be like, how Law & Order initially started. So it's going to be like, I'm guarded, but I'm excited to see it too. I want to see it kind of like a train wreck thing.
Well, Kyle, you saw the first two episodes, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, I don't think it's a train wreck. I didn't know Edie Falco was in it when I was watching it. And then she has this amazing like perm hairdo, like this blonde, because this trial, I didn't follow as much as like the OJ trial. So I'm not too, I know the general story about it, but I didn't know all the players besides the two brothers. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely played very, it feels very much like the OJ series, where it starts off doing the we see the events happen and we meet the characters and meet all these people. But I think if you like the OJ one, you'll probably like this as well. It has like the dun dun and all like the place names. Like it feels like it has the Law and Order look and feel, but it's also just a story about this crime. And then I hadn't gotten into the trial part yet, but I'm sure that's coming.
Oh, so you're two episodes in and they're still just putting together the pieces.
Yeah. Yeah, they're still introducing you to what happened. And I mean, it starts off with the crime happened, but now all the investigation initially. And then you meet like the lawyer. She's off doing these other cases at the beginning when you meet Edie Falco's character. And then everything comes together by the end of the second episode. I think that's why they had the two episodes on that screener site, because that's really when the case begins.
Interesting.
Hmm.
So, John, does that get you more excited or less?
It kind of gets me more excited. I mean, my biggest worry is that they try to play to everybody as opposed to just tell their story, and which is what I think Law & Order does these days, which is just try to create a show for everyone, and that's what I mean by gentrified. So that's why I was worried. But if it sounds more true to the story and gets really in the meat of it, yeah, okay, that gets me going. I'm excited.
Okay, well, Kyle, it is your turn. What's your number two that you're most excited for?
So my next one, which is a surprise to me, I didn't expect to even like the show, but I actually really enjoyed it. It's Kevin Probably Saves the World on ABC on October 3rd. So it stars Jason Ritter and Joanna Garcia Swisher. And they're like brother and sister. And he's like this depressed guy who like is suddenly he this like meteor thing happens, and then he meets like a guardian angel who like puts him on this mission to help people, where normally he's this like self-centered guy who only cares about himself, but now he's on this mission to help people. It's pretty much like Joan of Arcadia or any of those other type of shows where it's got a lot of humor in it, but it's also a drama that I'm sure people will be, their eyes will be welling up at certain parts. But I think it's, I really enjoyed it. I didn't expect to even like it, but I actually really enjoyed it.
Is it more funny, more comedy or drama, would you say?
I think it's a nice balance. It's a pretty even balance. There's definitely lots of humor, but then it gets pretty dramatic at times.
Okay. Well, one I'm interested in, and I don't know if that's good or bad because it's CBS, which means I could watch like three episodes, really like it, and never watch it again because that's how I seem to be with a lot of their shows. But I do like a good, what I like to call a filler show, which is basically it's a show I can watch and forget about. It's filler. And, you know, Hawaii 5-0, that's my sweet spot on CBS. I freaking love it until, I'll talk about that soon. But Wisdom of the Crowd is a show that I'm looking forward to. It comes out on October 1st on CBS. Jeremy Piven plays a tech innovator who develops this crowdsourcing tool that may help him find his daughter's murderer. And he also solves crimes in San Francisco. I don't know anything else about that. I found a brief clip. And it looks interesting, but I really like Jeremy Piven. He's always an actor that's fun to watch. I'd never know what the hell he's going to do. And put him in, I love murder mysteries. So you put an actor I love and you put a murder mystery in there and I'm going to watch it. And that's where that one falls for me.
Yeah, that one reminded me a lot of like APB. I don't know if you watched that at all on Fox. It has a similar premise where like this rich computer guy comes in and like provides some new law enforcement tool, or like Pure Genius, where you have all this extra tech stuff. I think it's not for me, but I think it's a very solid show for if you're looking for that type of show. And I think you definitely just jump in. It's probably going to be like there's an overarching story, but I think you can just watch like whatever the case that they're trying to solve each week. I'm sure it'll be pretty much self-contained.
So it didn't stand out to you at all, really?
I'm just not interested in that type of most of the CBS procedurals. You're not going to see on my list. I just not that like there's like three shows that are all the same show this fall. Like you got your SWAT SEAL team and The Brave, which are all very similar shows. But I think some of them are really solid, but just not my type of show.
Can I ask, since you do, I mean, you watch a lot of screeners, you're involved. I mean, your whole website is devoted to TV. Is CBS still basically like just targeting octogen, like octogenarians? I mean,
I think
so. Thank you. That's what I'm looking for.
Like, cause they got the raunchy humor and like every show, like it might look like a family show. And then like this year, like, in the winter, everything had naked butts in it. That seemed to be the theme of all the pilots. This year, it's ball jokes. On a bunch of the CBS ones, they're jokes involving people's balls, like, over and over again.
Can we go back to naked butts instead? I like that better.
Yeah, me too.
That was the theme of the winter. So maybe now everyone's, the summer. Like, now everyone's putting on their clothes, I guess, for the winter. So there's no naked butts, at least none in the pilots I saw. But yeah, I think they definitely gear older, or they're trying to be edgy with like the humor, or at least lower jokes. I don't watch a lot of CBS. I pretty much watch a couple of reality shows, but I typically don't watch much CBS.
You're too young. Scott, what's your
we're all too young, apparently.
One? Yeah, well. I like Hawaii 5-0, though. I ain't apologizing for it. I don't care.
I don't think that's for... Well, I guess it's on the same network, I guess, yeah, what you're saying. Okay. Anyway, my last one, I don't care. I'm going to get a lot of hate for this. I want to see it. I love Big Bang Theory, so I am excited for Young Sheldon, which is going to be on CBS.
It's you that did this to us.
Dude, I love Big Bang Theory, and I think this is... I want to see this. I genuinely, legitimately want to see how this turns out, and I am very hopeful that it's going to be good. Do I have high expectations that it will? No, but I want it to be. This one hits on CBS on Monday, September 25th at 8:30, which is actually right after the premiere of Big Bang Theory, I believe, of the new season of that. And after that, it's going to be on Thursdays after football from that point on. So that Monday is only going to be that first Monday of the run. But this is the story of the early life of child genius Sheldon, who was later seen in The Big Bang Theory, which started it back in 2007. Man, that's been 10 years. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. It stars Ian Armitage as young Sheldon and Zoe Perry as Sheldon's mother, which is particularly interesting to me because Zoe Perry is actually Laurie Metcalf's daughter, who played Sheldon's mother in the television series. So that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Great connection.
That's cool.
And also Annie Potts makes an appearance in the show as well, too. So screw the haters. I like Big Bang Theory, and I'm not going to be ashamed of it, and I want to see where this goes, and I'm hopeful for it. So
Good for
everybody
you.
Else can suck it.
Wow. Suck it.
Is Jim Parsons gonna make any appearances in this? Do we know?
He's doing the narrating. Yeah, the voiceover.
Yeah, Kyle, did you see the screen?
I did see this. It's not for me. But going into it, from the trailer, I knew I wasn't gonna be into it. And
do you like Big Bang Theory though?
We'll get to that later when we get to another question.
Oh no! Oh no!
You're my boy, Blue.
But I am still watching Big Bang Theory. But I know that wasn't your question. But I just didn't really care for the humor. And this also, like, unlike most of the CBS sitcoms, this doesn't have like a laugh track because this is a single camera show. Mm-hmm. So to me, that made it even more evident that I wasn't laughing. At least with the other laugh track, I know where I'm supposed to laugh. But here, when it's all silent, I don't necessarily know what's supposed to be funny in this. Well, I know what's supposed to be funny, but it's not. But I'm sure this is going to have people that really enjoy it because they like Sheldon. And I could be like, maybe it gets better after the first episode. I just wasn't sold by the first episode.
Well, I guess we're going to find out when you guys duel it out in 3 weeks. So
3 weeks, you mean the next segment?
Yeah, exactly. When you guys fisticuffs it. Johnny, what's your third one here?
This one is kind of a big surprise to me, if not to anybody else, but I've made it very clear that I'm not happy with the X-Men series. I'm not happy with anything they have to do with their cinematic universe, with the exception of Logan and Deadpool. That's the one. But I got surprised when I saw the preview for The Gifted on Fox October 2nd, and it looked really cool to me. It stars Amy Acker and Stephen Moyer. They're a couple of parents trying to protect their mutant children, and we're in a world where there's so much distrust in mutants and there's just a lot going on. It looks really cool. I'm surprised that I want to check it out. I want to see something that has some cool superpowers on TV.
Oh man. Kyle, did you see this one?
Crickets.
No, this is like the only one that I didn't get to see. I did get to talk to some of the cast at Comic-Con, and it did sound very interesting. Like some of the characters sound like no one would really say it, but it sounded like there one character may be related to Magneto somehow, mm-hmm. because she was describing Ooh. Her powers, and everyone's like, that sounds a lot like Magneto. She's like, yep, it does. So it sounds like they are going to really work this into the larger universe. So I'm interested in checking this one out as well.
Yeah, so am I. I was just waiting to see if Kyle had seen it. That's the only reason I was kind of like quiet on it. I am really psyched to see this one. I'm really, and I don't really get into many comic book shows anymore just because there's been so many of them. And CW had just burned me the hell out on the whole concept because, okay, everybody's got the same villain every year. Let's do something different. This feels like it could be something different. And I love Amy Acker. I really do.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sold. Just by her being in the cast means I'll watch it.
Yeah, I'm going to admit it. That probably didn't wonders for me, too.
Well, I'm a big Anson Mount fan, too, and well, we'll get there here soon. Okay, so, Kyle, what's your number three?
So that was my third. So I will go with The Good Doctor on ABC.
I mean, House? Premieres... Isn't that called House 2?
It sort of is. Feelings? Yeah. It premieres on September 25th. I don't know if this was necessarily a great show, but it features a great performance by Freddie Highmore. So the premise is that this doctor is this young autistic man who suddenly gets hired to work at this hospital. And of course, the administration doesn't trust him because they think it's a liability that he could do anything to the patients. And they don't really know, like he's unpredictable. Even though he may be smart, he's unpredictable. So yes, I know it sounds a lot like House as soon as I said that, but like when you actually see him, like it's pretty absurd that they would even hire him. Like just, he's very awkward with the patients, but I do like that idea, like with House where he'll just say what's on his mind. Matter of factly, he doesn't care about what, like being nice about it or being PC about it. He just says what's on his mind. I really it's humorous in some spots, and then they also have more dramatic scenes. So I think it'll be it's created by David Shore. I forget, did he do House as well? Or
I think he did.
Yep.
So yeah, I guess he's going back to the well again. But I think it should be an entertaining show, and I'm curious to see more of it.
All right. Well, it's kind of funny that he's doing almost the exact same show, but that's beside the point. Whatever. So, okay, I've got all right. I'm going to do October 3rd, The Mayor, ABC. I think this looks really funny. Courtney Rose, played by Brandon Michael Hall, thought running for mayor would drum up some business for his fledgling music career. It wound up making him a politician. I saw the trailer for this, and I was like, all right. And then I saw another trailer for it, and I got really interested in the concept. I don't necessarily know if it's going to translate, but I like the idea of someone who, a millennial, however you want to word it, who doesn't really want to get involved in politics, but kind of does it to boost his own celebrity. And then he actually has to do the job. And I think this can be really fun, a really cool concept, if it's done semi-smart. I don't know if that's the case because I haven't obviously seen it. Kyle, I think you did see it.
Yeah, it actually, anyone can watch it right now. The pilot's available for free on iTunes, Vudu, and some other places as well. You can watch it early.
Is it smart? Is it a smart show?
Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed this. This is I didn't put this on my list because I thought someone else would have it on their list. But yeah, this was definitely one of my favorite comedy of the new comedies. It has Yvette Nicole Brown. Like, she plays the mother, which, to me, like, at first I was like, wait, no, she's not the mother of a 25-year-old, but I guess if you do the math, it's fine. She had him when she was 16. But yeah, I really, like, it's a lot of fun. He has, like, two buddies that are, like, his campaign managers, and then Lea Michele is also in it. What's his name? David Spade is, like, the former mayor who loses out to him.
Oh, Lord.
So I don't know how much David Spade's going to be in it, but
I like David Spade, so I'm okay with that. Just surprises me.
Are there going to be any references to Icetown in this? Only the really good listeners will get that.
Okay. I don't understand what that meant.
I don't understand that either. So.
Anybody have any honorable mentions? Anyone? Anyone?
I got one. There's a show on NBC that they don't even have a time set for this one or a date, but it's called AP Bio. Have you guys heard about this one? Mm-mm. Yes, no? Aaron, this one seems right up your alley, and well, half up your alley, half up my alley, because it's about a teacher.
Gross. But,
teachers are gross.
Teachers are, but this is high school, so it's not not elementary. But anyway, a hilarious, cynical Ivy League professor loses out on his dream job and goes to work as a high school biology teacher, where he imposes his unorthodox teaching style and uses the kids to plot out revenge on those who wronged him. I think that sounds hilarious.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, right. I told you it seemed like right up your alley. So that was my only other honorable mention.
I'll check that out. Okay, who? Anybody else?
I got Marvel's Runaways that are coming out November 22nd on Hulu. And the reason why I'm interested in seeing this is that it's based off the comic book Runaways from Marvel Comics. And it's about kids who discover that their parents are all supervillains, and they decide to run away and reverse all the actions that their parents are doing. To me, that's a really neat premise, and I want to see how that folds out. And I think it'd be pretty fun.
All right. Kyle, any honorable mentions?
Orville, I'm hoping that they, that was one that I was really looking forward to, but that premiered a couple weeks ago. Like, if they can figure out what tone they want to be, right now it's a little weird. Like, it's either like a straight up homage to Star Trek The Next Generation, or it wants to be a sitcom like Galaxy Quest, and it can't really decide which. And I think if they can figure that out, I think I'll really enjoy it. I mean, I'm up for either one because I won't be watching Star Trek Discovery because I don't have CBS All Access. Hmm. So I'm fine watching a straight up Star Trek show.
Well, that is a nice segue because I was going to mention that, because none of us actually mentioned Star Trek Discovery, which comes out September 24th. And this is the newest Star Trek chapter. It's finally premiering, and it's going to premiere its first episode on CBS. And after that, fans are going to have to get a CBS All Access subscription to even watch the show. Does anybody think that's going to translate? I mean, I know a lot of Star Trek fans, and all of them, except me, maybe one or two, are telling me that they don't want to pay for it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is a stupid... I know they're trying to push their CBS All Access, but the fact that it's airing on like Netflix in other countries is if it airs at the same time, is just going to promote people to find other methods to watch it where they could have at least gotten the ad revenue from it airing on CBS. I don't understand why they don't just air this on CBS, even like air it on like a Saturday night or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I just don't get the concept. I mean, John, aren't you a Star Trek fan? Aren't you? No, Scott is one of you.
Sons
of
bitches. I mean, I haven't really watched since like Next Generation, or I mean, obviously the movies, but I would watch it if we're on. If we're on network, I'm not paying extra for it. There's just no way. I'm paying, and that because that would be the only thing I would be watching on that service is mm-hmm. that one show, and I can pay just a little bit more and have Netflix, a little bit more and I can have Hulu. I got so many other options that I'm going to go for before I go to a service that's going to give me one show that I'm kind of interested in seeing. So not going to happen.
You know, I don't. I know there's got to be more people like this, but I know people who like the idea of buying HBO just for Game of Thrones. I know people who just get Netflix for a month or two to catch up on all the shows that they had came out since they canceled their Netflix, and then they'll cancel their Netflix again. So I know people do this sort of thing, and I'm not above thinking that there will be at least a reasonable amount of people to do this with Star Trek.
I just, man, but those have something else to offer. I don't really have a big, you know, oh boy, I can go back and browse that NCIS catalog. That sounds like,
that'll keep them up, I think.
Yeah, they're all on TNT or something right now anyway. So I don't get the point of it.
I mean, they did have that, the spinoff of The Good Wife, which I did want to see that, but still not enough to make me subscribe to CBS All Access.
Man, I don't get it. But hopefully they don't, if it works, that's what all the networks are going to do. So I, as much as people want their new Star Trek, I'm kind of like, I'm okay if it doesn't do well. I am. Sorry. All right. Well, what?
Yeah, but if that hurts Star Trek in the future, that's a problem for me.
Because it's not going to hurt it in the future. People will get their hands on it eventually.
I mean, as far as being on TV, like if they're like, oh, well, it doesn't work for CBS All Access, so we're just going to not do it. We're just done with it as a series. We're going to stick to the movies. I think that there's a place in network television for a Star Trek show. Mm-hmm. I really do.
I do too. This just isn't network television.
But I don't think CBS really has anything to lose because they already made back their money selling the rights to abroad for Netflix. So, I mean, that's probably why they're willing to try to use this to sell their streaming service, because it doesn't really matter. They don't need to air it on TV in order to get the money because they've already made it.
So screw the fans. We're just going to have our safety net, and doesn't matter business. If it ever happens again.
It's a business, man. It's a business.
Well, yeah.
They don't. As much as we all think they care about the fans, they don't care so much about the fans.
I know, but they don't have to let us know that.
Well, Scott, don't take it so personally. It's just a TV show.
No, take it personally, man. Fire it up. Fire it up. Fire it up. All right. Well, let's move on. Now, this one we can do a little faster. Just you can do all of your shows that you want to mention at the same time because they're returning shows. So if you don't know what they are, you probably already don't know what they are. But mention, you know, what the show is, when it comes back, if you know, and why you're excited to see more of it. So what two or three returning shows are you most excited for, John?
Number one, I can't wait for Stranger Things. It was my favorite show last year. It's probably still my favorite show. I'd probably still watch it 15 times this week.
My list, too.
Yeah, and you know, so basically what we know of the story for this season, Will's going to is trying to just come back from his time in the Upside Down. Hopper's working to keep the secrets of what happened last season. Joyce brings a new man into her life to kind of try to stabilize her home for Jonathan and Will. And then we got a brother and sister duo who shake it up for our group of favorite teens and kids from Hawkins, Indiana. So that's what season two is going to look like. From the previews, everything looks awesome. I can't wait. I really hope they nail this one. I'm going to steal.
Awesome.
Go, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying everything is awesome. I got the song. The Lego song is now in my head. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Everything is awesome. All right, stealing one from Aaron. I know I'm stealing this from Aaron, but season two of Lethal Weapon.
You
I can't wait.
Dick. Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I know. So season two, Murtaugh finds navigating the stress of a job, a baby, and all this stuff is hard with his teenage kids, and he is just trying to make it. He tries to lean more on Riggs for support, but starts seeing that
Riggs is probably more messed up than everyone thought he was. Basically, it sounds like the synopsis I got was the same synopsis for season one. I don't care. I love everybody. I love the characters. I want to see them do it all over again.
Yeah. Can I just mention, once again, one of my favorite surprises from last year. Not enough credit goes to that show. I don't know what I think it's just the casting of Riggs and Murtaugh, which surprised me that Damon Wayans eventually warmed up to me, because I really hated him in the pilot. And by the time the second and third episode rolled around, I was like, man, these guys really do work well together. And I love the family dynamic. They've really captured the living, or the living color, the Lethal Weapon, the Lethal Weapon dynamic, and actually brought it in to make it its own thing. So if you never had to see the movies to enjoy it, you could love the movies and still enjoy it. And it's a rarity amongst remakes or reboots. So I can't wait. Yeah. Good call.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. And finally, this is going to probably end up on Aaron's list somewhere later on in the show, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's going to be airing directly after.
Nope. It's in the, I don't even know it's still on. That's how much I care about that show.
The fifth season might be its final season. And what we know from last season is that the season ended in space. And with the timing of how everything's boiling down, it looks like the end of the season, maybe the series, is going to line up with Infinity War perfectly. And then we'll probably be saying goodbye to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this season.
I said goodbye to it after season one. Bam! Yeah, that happened. You're welcome. All right. Well, I'm glad you're excited. I hope I stomped all over your dreams. Kyle, what about you? You have two or three returning shows you're really excited about?
My top pick is The Good Place, which I'm really excited for. It returns this week on NBC.
It's forking awesome.
It is a forking awesome show. It's so much fun. It's basically about these people who go to The Good Place, but think maybe so there was some mistake and they really belonged in the bad place. And so they try to learn how to be good and try to hide the fact that they were accidentally sorted into the wrong place. But the first season ended with like such a amazing, unexpected twist that I was a little worried about how the second season was going to, what was going to happen to these characters in the second season. Were they going to be the same characters that we loved from the first season? Mm-hmm. And I've already seen the first four episodes of the season, and it, nothing to worry about. It maintains the whole comedy and humor and lightness and fun of the first season, and I'm definitely excited to have this back at my TV.
Excellent. Any other ones? I want to see that too, and see. I got to finish watching the first season though before I can do that.
Yeah, I definitely recommend watching the first season because you want to see that, how that plays out, not just read about how the first season ended or watch the second season and have that spoiled.
Right.
That's on Netflix now too, the first season.
Yeah, it is. Yep.
I need to go watch that. I love the first episode. I don't know why I stopped.
Just no clue. Time and got busy.
Yep.
So for my second pick, I wanted to pick something that maybe people hadn't watched, and I didn't even realize the show was coming back. The Comedy Central has Nathan For You coming back on, I think it's September 28th. The show, I think it last aired in like 2015 was the third season. This is the fourth season. It's like a pseudo docu reality show where comedian Nathan Fielder plays this guy who graduated from one of Canada's top business schools with good grades. And now he uses that to help give advice to small business owners and on how to improve their business. But his ideas are like so insane or crazy and sound so stupid, but he gets these people to really implement these in their businesses. And it's just so much fun to watch. And you cringe. You can't believe these people are following his advice. But like, he has this very dry wit to the way he talks and acts. It's sort of his personality, but also amped up a bit. But I find that show a lot of fun. And I was surprised to even see it back on the schedule. And I'm excited to see more episodes of that show.
I never even heard of that one. So good pick. Anything else?
And I guess I would go, I'm torn between Bob's Burgers and Last Man on Earth. I'll go with Last Man on Earth because this season should have, what's her name? Kristen Wiig on it. She showed up at the end of last season, and so I'm excited to see her now be more of a part of the show. I don't know how many episodes she's in, but like the last season ended with her showing up to the rest of the group. So I'm looking forward to seeing her character show up more this season. Also, they didn't like, I think they thought they were going to be renewed last season, so they ended in a big cliffhanger. But this season, I'm hoping that if maybe they're not going to be renewed, they actually like wind up the whole show and give it a proper ending if they think that things don't look good. Cause I would really like to see how this all ends.
Yeah. All right. Good list. I'm going to go first off with The Blacklist, September 27th. Big shocker. They're going to tell us how last season's big reveal. Okay. Confirmation.
Why do you like that show so much?
There's a quote unquote confirmation at the end of last season. And you know what? I won't say what it is. Just there are some people that aren't caught up yet, and it is on Netflix. They're probably barreling through it, so I won't say. But there's a big confirmation, supposedly, at the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Did the show go full Heinrichs?
No. Not quite yet. It's close.
It's warming up? It's warming up? Getting close?
It's warming up. But people keep saying it's a confirmation, and it totally is not a confirmation.
Is this that crazy fan theory?
No. It's a theory that's really been pretty much all but tipped their hat to, their fedora to, many, many times. But Raymond Reddington's coming back, and Liz Keene's coming back. And obviously, I do a podcast called The Blacklist Exposed with Troy Heinrichs. I believe Academy Award-winning podcast. And we actually just went to, I wanted to mention this so I could bring up the writer's room trip. And not to say, hey, guys, I went to the writer's room. But when we went out to California, hey, guys, we went to the writer's room. And we got to see firsthand, we got to sit down with the writers of The Blacklist and talk to them about their process and how they break down stories and how they come up with ideas. And it's funny because they actually have a board of all the story ideas and everything that's going on, and they wiped the boards clean when we got there because they didn't want us to have any big secrets or anything, which I thought was pretty funny. But it was really interesting to see how TV writers break down ideas and how they all work on every episode. Even when one writer gets a credit, a story, you know, a screenplay credit, a lot of them are involved in that entire process. And it's really cool to see how that works, especially for, you know, TV when there's 22 episodes, how they break down a whole season, how they break it down per episode. It's a really interesting process, and it got me really excited for where they're going in the season coming up. I think people that were a little less excited about season 4 are going to be a little more excited for season 5 because of some of the changes and some of the plot developments they are making, because obviously Red Reddington has to rebuild his empire, and I think it's going to go to some cool places. So that's my first one. So be sure to check that out. And also, I'm going to share an interview in the feed on next week sometime with their special effects coordinator from The Blacklist. We did it for The Blacklist Exposed, but we left about 20 minutes of stuff out of it for that feed, and we're going to include it in this one where he talks about some of the movies he's worked on, like Spider-Man and some other stuff. It's a really interesting interview because you can hear exactly what special effects artists do, both in TV and film. You get a lot of insight into that. So even if you don't watch the show, check out that interview when it comes out, because it's really interesting. With Anthony Pepe is the guy's name. So look for that next week. So that's all the pimping I'll do, I promise.
Wait a minute, Aaron, yeah. On your other podcast, you got to go to like Hollywood and win an award and go hang out in a writer's room and all that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it sounds like you're like legit or something. What are you doing with a couple of yahoos like us?
It's a great point. And I ask myself that just about every week. But, you know, hey, our chance is coming. We got September 30th, I think, are the podcast awards. So I'm looking forward. Come on, for once, give Hollywood Outsider a goddamn award. It would be great. I'm sorry. That sounds like begging. Let's not do that. Number two is, I don't care. It's Hawaii 5-0. I'm really excited for Hawaii 5-0. Not because of the show. It's funny. I'm really excited because they had two primary actors in Daniel Day-Kim and Grace Park who left because they wanted more money. And now they're basically having to refill half the cast. And I'm fascinated to see how they're going to make this work. I can't wait to see what they do, because the show is very procedural. You don't need, like, it's not serialized in any way, shape, or form. So I guess you could have characters exit and whatnot. But they're actually having Grace Park's husband on the show, Adam, he's moving to full time. I'm like, how are you going to have the husband and not Grace Park? That, I don't know how that's going to work. I can't
she
wait.
Had a car accident.
Possible. If they kill him off, though, wouldn't that be kind of an insult to fans? Wouldn't it?
It's a season-long arc to investigate that murder and see who killed them.
Yes. That.
Oh, possible. See, it switches over to serialized after that. Oh, brilliant.
I like it. I like it. All right. And the last one, I really teetered, okay? I really teetered between Designated Survivor and Walking Dead. And Walking Dead surprised me by losing. Yeah. It really did. I am more excited for Designated Survivor, the second season, where you have Kiefer Sutherland being the almost reluctant president who's being forced to deal with people coming at him left and right with problems and trying to undermine his presidential, well, not campaign, he's president, just undermine him as president. It's a really fascinating show. You get a lot of drama. There's an undercurrent of a conspiracy going on. And Kiefer Sutherland just nails it. And he's such a – people never give him enough credit. You know, Jack Bauer never got enough credit because some people thought it was one note. I never felt that way. But here he's playing very meek so often. Like he's not a strong character in the beginning of the season. By the end of season one, he's an extremely strong character but not quite Jack Bauer. But you get little hints of that Kiefer Sutherland edge that he always has throughout his career. And I'm just waiting for the episode where he snaps and kills everybody in the room. So I'm back. Designated Survivor gets me excited. That's on ABC. So September 27th, it comes back. There you go. Boom. That's my three. Scott, what do you got?
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah! I'm just kidding.
I love the show. I don't care what anybody says. That finale was one of the better finales of the season. I still find it funny. There was a season a couple seasons ago that was very dry and trying too hard. I felt like they bounced it back with the last season, and I'm excited for more because I think it's funny, and I don't need the laugh tracks to tell me when it's funny. It's funny.
My wife loves that show, man. Loves it. So, you know, yeah. She's with you.
But I also understand it's not for some people. I mean, it's a brand of humor that just doesn't work for everybody, and I get that. But there's a lot of people out there like me. Otherwise, they wouldn't have 10 seasons of it. So
you're right.
I don't know. The other big one is This Is Us. I'm shocked nobody else mentioned this one. That show became the show that my wife and I watched every week. And outside of things like America's Got Talent, we don't sit down and watch a television show together a whole lot. And man, that first season was really, really good. It was very well written, very well acted, and really just kind of give you a punch in the gut. And I cannot wait to see where they go with that because that might have been my favorite show from last year, if memory serves me right. It was really good. That, and we're also getting a new season of A Series of Unfortunate Events on Netflix. That first season was just a lot of fun. I don't know the date on that one for certain, but I'm definitely ready for more on that one. And John already mentioned Stranger Things, and the other one I put at the bottom just because I'm not caught up on the show. It's one of those ones that I did watch with my wife, but we are not caught up because it's hard for us to coordinate, and that's The Goldbergs. That show is consistently funny to me, and it's fun seeing that kid grow up and turn into a younger version of me as he gets older. So I love The Goldbergs. So that's my list.
That's a good list. And you know what? You're right about Big Bang Theory. I never understand, you know, everybody loves to just poo-poo that show. And granted, if you don't like it, you don't like it. And even I think some of the jokes have gotten stale for me personally. But when there's like millions and millions of people watching it, maybe it's just not for you, man. I mean, you know, I don't get why people love to just give people, why would you watch that show? You're so stupid. Da, 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 da. I mean, if you don't like it, you don't like it. But it's still watched by millions and they enjoy it. So shut up. Or say it nicer. Just say it nicer. Just disagree or have an actual respectful debate about it. Instead, you know, here's why I don't like it. Here's what here are my issues with it, and da da da. Instead of going, you're dumb for watching that. Only dumb people watch that show. All right, there's a lot of dumb people in America then. I mean, well, all right, that's not a good argument. But you get what I'm saying.
It's just facts.
You just talked yourself in a circle, didn't you?
I sure did. I should have just shut up from the get-go. All right, what's the one show you wish would get canceled already? One show you wish would get canceled. This is where I'm just going to be a total hypocrite on my own debate. Just go ahead and poo-poo all over some show. Go ahead, Kyle.
So as someone who already watches way too much TV, I generally welcome as many shows as possible on the schedule that I don't watch, because that means that's hours of TV that I don't need to worry about fitting into my schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I'm also a completist. And once I start a show, I have to, especially if it's been on, say, 10 years, I have to watch it till the end. And so my pick is The Big Bang Theory, because I'd like to see this finally come to an end. I've been watching it for 10 years. Some of it, like you said, like in the past, like there's been that really stale season. It's gotten slightly better, but I don't think it's as good as it was when they first introduced like the female characters to the show. The first season was terrible. Like the pilot was awful, but then it got really good once they introduced Amy and I can't think of her name. Bernadette. Yeah. And then it's just been on so long now at this point, I would just like to see it go. Not that, like, perfect timing that I had to go first right after you gave your
yeah.
Oh, that was orchestrated, man. That was all Aaron, man. No, and understand, I'm not knocking you. I know you don't like the show, but I mean, the way you phrase it, even when we're talking about Young Sheldon, was it's not for me. That's a different argument. If it's not for you, I'm okay with that. I get it. I just get a lot of people that come at me and say the show is not funny, and if you take the laugh track out of it, it's super awkward. And well, yeah, it's a sitcom with the laugh track behind it. Of course, it's going to be awkward. They have to not talk during a laugh track. There are people, nerds like me, that are complaining that it's making fun of them, or I don't know. And those arguments just drive me crazy. Just don't watch it. Why are you watching it if you hate it so much? How do you know it sucks so much unless you're watching it? Stop watching it.
Stop making sense.
Yeah, stop making sense. Stop making sense. All right. Well, I'm glad you got to fight him. Next time, I really hope you guys get a little muddier. Like maybe lather up a little bit before you get into this, because that would be more fun for me. All right. Law and Order.
Way to make it weird, Aaron. Yeah.
You say weird. I say more exciting. I'm trying to juice up the race.
You say exotic.
Law and Order SVU. I've always loved Law and Order SVU. I love that I can turn it on anytime and I can watch it. Doesn't matter if I haven't seen it in 10 years or I've seen every episode, because it's a great procedural. It's really interesting and I love it. But it's time to go. It's just time to go. I don't know how Mariska Hargitay, I thought she quit like 4 years ago, but she's still on. She's still doing it. What's it?
Don't all the criminals know her by now?
Right. I mean, as soon as she knocked on your door, you should be bouncing on a window. It's like Chris Hansen showing up at a pedophile's house. You know it's a problem.
Have a seat, son.
No, leave. So I would say it's time to put a fork in it. 19 years is way too many rape cases and kid diddling. It's time to wrap it up.
Agreed. That's got to go.
So, I still have never seen an episode of that show.
Probably a poor choice of words, right, Scott?
I think I tried to record one once when they had Frodo on there, but I couldn't. Something messed up and my DVR or VCR at the time didn't record it, and then I never ended up watching it.
Kyle, just watch one episode, and then you've seen them all.
That's true.
Set.
That's true.
You know, there's a whole bunch of nuance you're missing, but I get your point. I mean, you got to get like a good iced tea line in, at least 10 good iced tea line ins, and you're set. Then you can go.
All right, Scott, we gotta wrap up the segment. So what's yours?
Well, before I give the one that I wish would cancel, I think we should all take a moment and just celebrate the fact that a show did get canceled this year, and that's Two Broke Girls. Who was watching that show? And thank God it's finally over. I'm so tired of seeing the commercials for that damn show.
Is that canceled?
Yeah.
It got canceled.
That's how little I watched it. I didn't even know it was still on or off. So,
but I didn't.
I mean,
I watched
the only reason
I want
to watch it is with volume off.
Yeah, there you go. I get what you're saying. I get what you mean.
You're classy.
I get what you mean.
You're a classy guy, John. You're classy.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I am what I am. I'm like Popeye over here.
And I feel kind of bad saying that I wish this show would get canceled because I've never watched an episode, but as much crap as everybody is talking about Fear the Walking Dead, I have refused to watch it because I don't want my enjoyment of the original series to be tarnished by how crappy everyone claims that show is. So if everybody says it sucks, why is it still happening? I've never heard a single person say it was good.
The third season was good.
It's in three seasons already?
I think it's on the... Yeah, is it on the fourth season?
It's on the third season right now. The second season was good. The first was bad.
Yeah, the second. Yeah, the
second. Not that I know. Not that I know, because I don't watch. That's just what I hear on the grapevine, because I don't watch that show.
Yeah, the first season was awful. I'll never watch it again. I don't care. They could tell me it becomes the best television in history, and I'm with Scott still. Cancel it.
Yeah. No, we're aware. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's how it happens.
No, that's just a bad show. All right, John. So what the...
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, and I would say that should get canceled, but I totally forgot that it was on. All right, John. So what's your must-go-away show?
My must-go-away show is Gotham, and I'm tired of Gotham. I'm tired of seeing the commercials for Gotham. I'm tired, you know. I even watched it for whenever it was on Netflix, and I got 3 good seasons out of Gotham, and I just kind of said, this is ridiculous. It doesn't feel like Batman. It doesn't feel like it feels like Kmart brand Batman, and it's stupid. It's ridiculous. It's like all the bad guys are just barely the bad guys from what we know from the comics and the movies. And then today I got prompted to go look for baby Batman, and yeah, that's gotta go.
Yeah, the Batman costume looks like the Gimp. What the hell is going on, man? That is not a good choice. I'm like, Batman's a Gimp. Is that what he is? He's the Gimp. All right,
he's the Gimp.
That's the costume choice we're going for. 50 Shades of Batman. So awful. All right. Well, we're going to wrap this puppy up. But first, we got some listener picks that we want to mention real quick. But before we do that, I want to give you what our listener top five. In our Facebook group, we put out a poll and said, hey, what shows are you most excited about this fall? Here are the top five. Number five, The Punisher. Number four, Black Mirror. I didn't realize a new season was dropping, but according to listeners, it is. Number three, Star Trek Discovery. Number two, This Is Us. It took us a long time to get to This Is Us, but This Is Us. And number one, and it was not close, by the way. It was like three times as much voting. Stranger Things. That is a phenomenon. A juggernaut, if you will. So, boom. All right. Well, do your three listener picks and just do them in order. Go ahead, Scott.
My first one comes from Sherry Odom. She says, I have to say the new Will and Grace is the best, quote, new show I'm excited for. Returning shows has to be Stranger Things and Walking Dead. I can't wait to find out more about Old Man Rick. Other new shows, I'm waiting to listen to this podcast. Come on here, cutting it close. LOL. And the big reason I picked Sherry's is because of her mention of Will and Grace. That's a show I never watched, as you can probably imagine. Think of where I was at the time when that show came out. So obviously it was going to happen for me. But watching the trailers for that show, it looks hilarious. And I know this may not be the sitcom crowd here, but my wife and I have laughed out loud multiple times on some of the trailers and that. And unfortunately, the original Will and Grace series isn't streaming anywhere, like Netflix, Hulu, anything. I really want to go back and watch those shows before watching the new one. I don't know if I'll be lost watching this because I don't know the characters very well, but that's a show I missed and I wish I could go back and watch. But I don't want to buy 8 seasons of a show I've never watched before on a... just to see if I like it. You know what I mean?
That's intentional.
Come on down here. We got all 8 seasons down here.
Do you? I've got them all too as well.
No, okay. Someone's got to let me borrow them so I can, or at least the first season.
They're not going to have them streaming when they have a new show coming out. They're like, no, because then people will just watch the old one. No, we got to watch the new stuff.
No, I get it. I just, it's not one I've never considered.
Binging.
You know, renting or buying those discs. That's 8 seasons, but that's one I could definitely get behind.
You got more listener picks?
I do. The next one comes from Ty Nelson. He says, I'm interested in Star Trek Discovery, but I'm not subscribing to the service, so it doesn't really exist for me yet. And there were some other discussion points after that from people like Dave McGraw who were saying, well, it's available over here. And we've already had that discussion, but didn't know we were going to have that discussion before I picked that comment. So thanks, Ty. And my last one comes from Jonathan Spear, who said, Westworld isn't technically until next year, so I voted the Goldbergs. And I just like this comment because he, obviously it would have been Westworld, but that's not coming this year.
Yeah, that needs to come sooner.
Really angry. I have to wait that much longer for that show because I feel like I'm going to watch that first season like 2 or 3 more times before season 2 comes because it's that good.
Blu-ray is coming out in November. Even though I have HBO and I can watch it whenever I want, I'm like, I still want the Blu-ray, which is stupid.
Yeah.
It's just a stupid thing.
That really is, man.
Yeah, I know. All right, Kyle, what's your three listener picks?
So my first pick is from Angela Lee Wallach. She said, Dirk Gently, Mr. Robot, and Stranger Things. If I had to pick only one, though, it would be Dirk Gently. The trailer for the new season looks chaotically wonderful. I picked this because I enjoy both Dirk Gently and Mr. Robot, And I never realized just how bonkers the first season of Dirk Gently was until I watched them recap it at Comic-Con, at their Comic-Con panel. And it's just insane what happens in that first season. And like, even with all this seemingly random craziness that happens in the first season, they managed to pull it all together and interconnect all these stories. And it was just amazing by the end of that season. So I'm also really looking forward to season two and seeing what that's all about.
Excellent.
And then my second one was from David McGrath. He said, with the success of McGrath.
Yeah, no, it looks like McGrath. It's actually spelled pronounced McGraw. He corrected us.
Let me start that.
No. Screw that. Keep going.
He doesn't know how to spell his own damn name.
So he said, with the success of Stranger Things and It, brace yourself for a tsunami of 80s-inspired movies and TV in the near future. Absolutely nothing wrong with that, except maybe for parachute pants. And so I, too, welcome as much 80s on TV as I want. And like later this year, or maybe it's next year, we'll have the final season of The Americans coming. There's always your daily dose of the 80s with the Goldbergs. If you want to watch more 80s, you can watch The Menendez Brothers, which is late 80s, early 90s. Same with Me, Myself, and I. There's that early 90s, which is almost 80s. So there's some stuff this season that you'll be able to see that's more 80s stories.
Excellent. All right. Did you have another one? You had three, right?
Yeah. So my last one is a long one. It's from Peter Dennis. And he says, there isn't a great deal I'm excited for outside of what's been mentioned. But let's face it, so many things get dropped on Netflix that we don't know about. I'm sure I'm still going to have way too much TV to watch. I'm looking forward to Designated Survivor because I watched the first season with my son and it was good to see him branch out to things other than YouTube. Also, my kids love the Goldbergs, so we're excited for that because that's 30 minutes a week. I know my kids won't be fighting. I can't wait to see where Lethal Weapon goes because the show has so much charm and more people should watch it. Also, The Mick was my favorite new discovery of recent times. I want more Caitlin Olsen. Also, I will watch anything with Andrea Savage in it. Because she's the only woman I would ever consider marrying again. So there's so much in there.
What just happened?
So I'll just pick out. I'll pick out the good ones that I also agree with, like Designated Survivor. You already brought it up. I didn't know if anyone's going to bring it up, so that's why I added this to my list. The Mick is a great show. I really enjoyed that first season. I'm looking forward to seeing more of that. And Andrea Savage, if you haven't seen True TV's I'm Sorry, which just recently ended, that is such a hilarious and totally inappropriate show that you definitely need to check out. That's already been picked up for a second season, so there's more to come of that. But Excellent. That's definitely worth watching.
Sweetness, man. All right. And Johnny.
All right. Steve Race. Got to be Star Trek Discovery for me. I have high hopes for this one. Keep on hoping.
Wow.
No, I got your back, Steve. That's what I meant by that. Will Ross, let's just keep on moving like nothing ever happened. I'm super excited for Real Housewives. I'm kidding. The Good Place. Maybe I shouldn't read this because it sounds like it gives away the ending of The Good Place.
Don't read the ending part. Yeah, just the reboot part or just the whatever. Just say The Good Place.
I think Aaron just messed the whole thing up. The chemistry was well done with the characters, and it was one of those shows that was just flat out a lot of fun. And you know what? I didn't get a chance to mention earlier, but The Good Place was something I really did enjoy. But like Aaron and Scott, it was something I kind of just, it fell off my schedule and I didn't make room for it. I was really happy to see it on Netflix, so I do have to check it out, especially with what Will Ross is describing as how the season ended. And then Reese Bennett. I've got to say, other than Punisher, Ghosted, and Electric Dreams, which I had to look up Electric Dreams, and that looks really cool because it's a Philip K. Dick anthology, mm-hmm. I think, if I got it right.
Correct.
There's not much that's new this year and I'm excited about. The networks are really disappointing. Reason why I chose this was because when I was looking through the list of what's coming this year, it wasn't like last year. Last year had several shows that I was like, ooh, I can't wait to check that out. And this one, I really had to work and look through it to see what was coming. And I really feel the same way. Like this year is kind of a disappointing for new shows. So hopefully that means that we'll get some growth in the shows we already have. That might be nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would be. Yes. I was agreeing with you. Okay, I agree.
Yeah.
Cool. Or they're saving all the good stuff for mid-season. And
that's true, too. I was actually kind of shocked that Aaron was agreeing with me on something. That's why I kind of shut up for a second. Yeah. I was like, just take it in.
Just enjoy it. Enjoy it before you're wrong again.
Right. Because it's going to happen in 3, 2, 1.
Is that it? Or are you?
That's it. Okay. That's my three.
All right, my three. I'll try to be quick. Peter Germany. I've got high expectations for the Punisher. If they carry over his portrayal from Daredevil, it's going to be amazing. That's right, Peter. I'm going to butcher this. Why did I pick somebody with a complicated name? Yvette Liz? You know,
that one's hard for me, too.
Okay. Lugo. Excited to see the return of Timeless. Man, I am... Man or woman, I am so sorry. I'm just kidding. I am so sorry. I'm covering every base I can. Excited to see the return of Timeless, especially because it was canceled and renewed the next day. Yeah, that was one of the craziest things I've seen on TV. My favorite sci-fi is time travel and how the butterfly effect is handled. I always expect holes, but Timeless does address this. I am also excited for Star Trek and Will and Grace, but I do not consider those new shows because they have a fan base already. Finally, congratulations on the award for the Blacklist podcast. I will watch Blacklist because I want to know the conclusion and I want Troy's theory to be right. But the series should have wrapped up, especially when they added the baby. Lugo. I'm just going to call you Lugo for short so I don't mess up anything else. Troy's theory has so many holes, it's a screen door, but that's fine. It's totally fine. And for those that don't know, I'll let you know. Troy Heinrich's theory on the Blacklist Exposed podcast.
You really want to do that?
It's a theory. It's a theory.
It's a theory.
It's okay. Not the real it's thing. Not confirmed. It's none of it is confirmed, so it's just a theory. That Raymond Reddington is, in fact, Liz's mom. Yeah. Yeah, I said that. So he had a sex change at some point, or she had a sex, whatever. Troy is just bonkers. Whatever. Listen to the podcast. You can hear more about it. I highly don't recommend you ever hear that. Paul,
I'm not going to lie. I hope he's right just so that he can go neener, neener in your face on the show.
Oh, he's not going to even go neener, neener. He is going to like tackle Aaron and mushroom print the crap out of him for it.
mushroom stamp.
All right. Paul Asell, Lethal Weapon and Stranger Things are what I'm the most excited for. I'm doing a rewatch of Lethal Weapon, and I never do that. It's one of my top five favorite shows ever, ever, ever. I hope they can keep up the dynamic this season as well. Stranger Things takes me back to a simpler time, and that's a lot of the draw for me, and the story, of course. There are many 80s movie wannabes, but the story doesn't hold. This one does, and I cannot wait. I agree with everything you just said. And those are two of my favorites, but everybody else stole them. So I'm glad I got your comment to back up what I wanted to say. So thanks, guys.
Word.
Oh, all right. Quicker than that was our fall TV preview. You are welcome for all that yapping, people. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please, Scott, if you could sing Moana right now, that would be great.
Sure. Shiny.
All right. That's enough of that. So, please, I hope you go back and listen to all, what was it, an hour and 20-some minutes or whatever of brand new and returning TV shows. There's a lot of stuff in there. You might want to go back and listen with a pen and paper if you weren't the first time so you can write down when all that stuff is. Hopefully, it helps you find something. But before we let Kyle go, there's one question I got to ask you, Kyle. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. There was a show we didn't talk about. It comes out September 29th. It's called Marvel's Inhumans on ABC.
Oh, boy.
And it follows a race of superhumans ruled by Black Bolt, who's played by Hell on Wheels, one of my favorite shows, Anson Mount. It's a character who remains mute because his voice has the power to cause mass destruction. You saw the first few episodes, couple episodes, whatever. I just got to ask you, are the reviews saying it's abysmal true?
Absolutely. At first, when I heard that, like people were, I thought they were doing the whole Chicken Little, Sky is Falling, because no one's seeing it at IMAX. It must be a horrible show, which to me, that was just ridiculous, because why would I pay IMAX prices to see something that I can see for free like a month later?
Right.
But after I watched it, definitely not a false accusation there. I think people knew it was bad and were just avoiding it because it's like I never really cared that much about the Inhuman stuff on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to begin with, and I care even less about a whole political coup on their like secret home base on the moon. Like, that to me is even less interesting than what they were doing already on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And plus, you have someone like Anson Mount, and you don't let him talk. Like, why would you get him and not let him talk?
Yeah. So he can look sternly into the camera and smolder to the ladies.
Smolder.
Yep. Time to smolder, guys. It's my moment. I don't get it. So it just real quick, is it acting? Is it story? Is it special effects? Or is it everything?
I think it's a little bit of everything. Like, the special effects aren't too bad. I think it's mainly the story. The acting isn't awful. I mean, some of them are better than others, but I think, it's mainly, I'd say if I had to pick one, it was the story that's just bad.
All right. That's what I need to know, man. Thanks for cluing us in. And thanks for all the updates. Once again, you can go to noreruns.net and see all of Kyle's wrap-ups of other shows and interviews. He's got a lot of interviews, including with Sean and Gus, who I might have mentioned earlier. And I'll mention again. Thanks again for coming by, Kyle. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Kyle.
Thanks, Kyle.
Okay, now before we get to our game for the week, our feature of the week, we want to take a second and say thank you to our Patreon supporters who donated at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. There's a link in the show notes. We don't want you to get something for nothing, though. If you want to donate and help the show and support us, because it does keep the lights on and pay the bills, we wanted to give you something back. So while the normal weekly show is still the same, Patreon supporters do receive exclusive bonus episodes of the show. Our fall movie preview, actually, just went live on Patreon. So if you want to hear that, it's available at the link I just told you, where we discuss the movies we're most looking forward to this fall, as well as What's Bothering Scott, a flashback recommendation from John, and a behind-the-scenes host story from me. Then, at the end of each month, every single month, we have Bad Movie Night, where we suffer through a really horrible movie on Netflix that our Patreon supporters do get to help choose. And we just did White Chicks, we did Zombievers, and this month will be Catwoman. Yeah, that happened. There are four tiers to choose from, so find the one that suits your budget and fits your interest. But donating $5 or more gets you both of those episodes every single month. So please, if you feel generous, have at it. It's not a requirement, just a request. New supporters, Will Ross, welcome back. Thank you for supporting to Patreon, patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider, and subscribing to our top tier is Masal Young. Thank you so much, sir. We do appreciate it, and we will be in touch with you about your other rewards soon. Now,
you know what, before we move on, I want to remind everyone that you have a chance on Patreon to, everyone gets a private link for their Patreon to add to their podcast feed so that they will be able to listen to the show from their usual podcast app. So you won't be strapped to your computer. You don't have to wait to be around your computer to listen to us. For being a Patreon supporter, you can listen to everything through your own special link in your account for the show on your phone.
Woohoo! Awesome stuff. All right, now it's time for our whole game or feature.
All right, we are going to be doing, first off, going back to last week's show, where we did What's This Movie. We had Aaron, Amanda, and myself each give we didn't do a clip of a movie, but we kind of gave a really bad description of it. Mm-hmm. And some people got all of these right. So Aaron's, if you remember his movie was Maximum Overdrive. Those that got his movie correct were John Sanford, Tori Melching, and Kyle Nolan. Amanda's was Back to the Future, and nobody got that one except for the people that got all three right. So that was a little bit more difficult. I didn't even get that one, and it's like one of my favorite movies. So well done. And mine was Mean Girls, and John Sanford, Tori Melching, and Kyle Nolan all got that one as well. Those that got all three correct were Manuel Perez and Steve Peterson. Didn't we call him Shazam of movies, right?
Yeah. Those two are like neck and neck. But I got to say, Steve dropped out for a little while, so I think Manuel might have risen to the top of the ranks. I think he's running 100%.
Start keeping score or something.
We should start keeping score, but I'm pretty sure Steve's still got seniority over Manuel. So
you can't not do it for a couple weeks and still hold that seniority, man. It's just not how it works. I don't know.
You know, Steve was right for so many, like, for what, 2 years straight? Manuel's only been right for maybe a year.
I don't know. I'm just saying it's pretty close to mine. Maybe they should duke it out. We should have battle royale.
They should duke it out. I want to see them fight it out.
We could have like a game show where like one of us is the host and we just have like a trivia question or name that movie clip in 5 seconds.
Those two duke it out. I like it.
Yeah, let's do it. Make it a little, I don't know. All right, well, this week we're going to do something a little bit different. We've done this before, but we're going to be doing significant anniversaries. This is where we discuss films that have had a big milestone this past week, and we've got two of them this week. The first is Fatal Attraction, and the other is The Princess Bride. Both hit their 30th anniversaries this month, so we're going to discuss both of their films and their cultural impact over the years. Let's start with Fatal Attraction, because all I can remember from that movie is the boiling bunny scene. That's like, I feel like that's what the movie's known for. Am I alone?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting what the kind of cultural impact that movie had, because I know that for me, that was basically it for me. I know I've seen bits and pieces of it. I barely remember what happened with it, but I know that for a long time I would gauge whether or not I was with a good girl or not if I can picture her boiling my rabbit, which I was actually wrong most of the time. But still,
so was I. Don't feel bad.
But it's interesting. Like, even a movie that I don't remember a lot about, or I didn't absorb, or even enjoy, really like seeped into the zeitgeist of the time, and the internet wasn't even there to push it. So it's really cool to see that from this.
It was a disturbing movie. I mean, I was a kid, but my mom was awesome, so I got to see it anyway. And I didn't fully comprehend everything that was at play, like why people were so fascinated with this at the time. And then you get a little older and you're like, oh, that's why women hate guys that have affairs. So, of course, their lives should be awful. I get it. But really, should it be like threatening your family awful? I mean, women were so excited about this. I'm like, she's threatening his family, not just him, you know. And but they jumped on that soapbox, man. They ate that up. They're like, that's what you get. I'm like, I don't think dead bunnies should be what you get. I just don't feel like that's karma. I mean, the rabbit didn't do anything. That rabbit was an innocent bystander. He probably didn't even see it. I mean, I guess maybe it was, if this is an Aronofsky film, this would be a metaphor because he was humping like bunnies, God. You know. But I just felt like.
You know what I can't, you know what I want? I want an Aronofsky movie written by Danny McBride starring Miles Teller.
Miles Teller? Holy shit. That's like the trifecta of Aaron's head imploding upon itself.
I can't wait for nobody to see it.
He would go see it anyway.
I would. Yeah. And nobody else would. Because none of them are very successful. I back to Fatal Attraction. Seriously. I'm a big Michael Douglas fan. A lot of people hate Michael Douglas. I'm not with you. I love Michael Douglas. I always have. He's just an actor I enjoy. I really feel like he was playing himself in this movie, especially if you know his personal history. He's totally just playing himself. But he had this weird thing where in like the late 80s, early 90s, he did a lot of these sexy thriller kind of movies.
Yep.
I never quite understood it because he's not really a sexy dude. But he was like now in this day and age, it'd be guys like Jamie Dornan.
He was rich, dude. In those movies, he was a rich guy. That's a sexy dude in the 80s.
No, but I get it. But like back, if you watched those movies now, it would be a Chris Hemsworth or a Jamie Dornan or those kind of actors. I mean, it would be a good-looking, studly dude. Back then, Michael Douglas was the guy. And it just kind of shocks me looking back that all these women were just throwing themselves at Michael Douglas. And that's what Fatal Attraction reminds me of. But mostly it reminds me of the original ending, which is where she frames him for her murder or for her suicide. Like she kills herself and basically he gets picked up for her murder.
Mm.
That was the original.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That was the alternate ending. And they decided that was too dark. I mean, cause they got to make the woman apparently make her crazy, even though did she really do a whole lot wrong? I mean, other than see things that weren't there and imagine a relationship that wasn't there, did she do anything? Kill bunnies? She's totally fine otherwise. But yeah.
I mean, she was the other woman. She knew he was married, right?
That's true.
If they played that ending to, you know, today, it would have been even 100 times more accepted than it was before. Like, take a look at Gone Girl. I mean, Gone Girl, that sounds like basically how Gone Girl could have gone.
Would you have, back then, would you have liked that ending? Was that back karma? Then, was that karma?
Back then, I was 8 or 9.
I'm just saying, a lot of people think like what her stalking him was his karma, and that, which I think is ridiculous. Because at one point she kidnaps his son, the other woman kidnaps his son and takes him, you know, basically his son is missing for a long period of time. Now she doesn't hurt the boy, but she takes that kid and she disappears with him for a long time. Like that's not karma. That's jacked up. And we should be more concerned about the feeling that we're okay with this being karma, which is all I got.
Oh, dude, when it comes to women, there's nothing worse that you can do than cheat. Like, I mean, outside of maybe diddling kids or something, that's cheating is like the second worst thing you could do.
But please, Scott, tell us more about how you know this.
Hearing them talk about it. If you hear.
Exactly.
Well, they just say that they act like that's like the worst thing in the world. Like, you can't do anything worse. And that movie didn't help.
No, I remember it made guys like they wouldn't even do business trips for a while. Like, you know what?
Yeah.
I probably don't need to go out.
Yeah. Wasn't this also around the time of Lorena Bobbitt too?
No, this Lorena is long before Lorena Bobbitt. Where you don't know who Lorena Bobbitt was?
Yeah, she's the woman that chopped the dude's thing off and put out a car window, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which also karma.
Yeah, she got basically a slap on the wrist for that, didn't she?
She sure did. I'm like, that's not karma. We need to work on our definition of what karma is, because that's not karma. Oh, man, that's enough on that one. What's the other one?
The other is The Princess Bride. And if you guys haven't seen The Princess Bride, you need to go remedy that right away. That is one of my all-time favorite movies. It starts out with Fred Savage being read a story by his grandfather, and then the rest of the movie is played out while the father tells a story. It's got Cary Elwes. It's got Robin Wright Penn, who was, I think, just Robin Wright at that point, wasn't she? She wasn't Robin Wright Penn yet.
No, she's just Robin Wright at that point.
Princess Buttercup falls in love with a farm boy, but she winds up getting betrothed to a really evil prince, and it's all about him coming back to rescue her. And I love this movie because it's seriously like in my top 10 favorite movies of all time, and it's so rewatchable, so quotable. I actually me and my friends dressed up like the characters from Princess Bride one year for Halloween. I was the Man in Black. My brother was, Inigo Montoya. My sister-in-law was Princess Buttercup. And my buddy, Rob, Aaron, you know Rob Schwizo.
Yeah.
He was Vicini.
Oh, so that's imagine perfect, that
for a minute.
Perfect fit,
Perfect. Because he's a short, balder man. And we actually acted out scenes from the movie, which he had memorized. He memorized the whole poison swapping scene, like word for word, and we acted it out. It was a lot of fun. Anyway, even though this movie is like sets are cheap as hell, and they look like they're on like the rocks and stuff, like paper mache. It's ridiculous. I don't know, there's something that kind of adds to the charm of that movie for me. And the line "as you wish," just like how "as you wish" means "I love you," is it just became a thing for a little while. I adore this movie. It's got comedy, it's got action, it's got a love story. It's just such a great flick, and do you guys like it as much as I do, or am I just talking too much?
No, I absolutely adore this movie. I love this movie for what it is and what it's done and what it's done and how it's made me feel through. Actually, I watch it whenever I'm sick, but I also love it because this is one of those few movies that it took only one movie to bring people together. It takes one movie of you know, not a series, not an ongoing story, just one movie, and suddenly two strangers can start quoting lines back and forth about this movie and become best friends. It's so beautiful to watch a movie like this have this effect. Something so cheaply put together with actors that we barely knew at the time, and Andre the Giant, we all knew who he was. Mm-hmm. And it's just great to see that, especially, and I've said it three times, but for a movie that's had one chance, and even its first chance in the theater wasn't highly appreciated or loved. It wasn't until its cult status that it really started seeping in and had this effect on people. And I adore it for that reason.
I like it. It's fine. It's not one of my top movies, but I agree with
what if Kurt Russell were in it.
It would have been so much better. It's one of the, I agree with what John said. It's one of those movies that people, it doesn't do it for me. I'm more of like, for that time frame, like the Big Trouble in Little China kind of movies. I like those movies better than I like Princess Bride. Princess Bride was too probably joyful. There wasn't enough edge to it for me at that time, so it didn't stick with me. But I have a lot of friends that really gravitate toward that movie, that love that movie, like Scott and Angela and several other friends. And they can be in a room and somebody else will say some random quote. And honestly, I probably don't even know most of the quotes from it, but they'll say something from it. And then, bam, they're instant friends. And that, to me, is a true definition of a great movie. It doesn't have to be a great movie to me, but that is definitely a great movie. in many respects. So I won't take anything away from it. I think it's a great movie. It's just not for me. There you go. That's what I have to say.
I like it.
Sounds good. Okay. Now let's go to spoiler free reviews. We got just two. I'm going to talk about Mother briefly. And then after the show, after these guys, you know, get to retort if they want, or retreat if they want.
I'm going to retort. I didn't see that movie, but I'm going to retort.
Then I'm going to talk about the spoilery a little bit. But here's a spoiler-free version, so I'm not going to ruin anything for you because it's gotten a lot of vitriol thrown its way. And I'm going to tell you, you know, what I thought. So Mother. Jennifer Lawrence stars as Mother. She lives in a very isolated home. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere. And she lives with her husband, who is only known as him throughout the film, and played by Javier Bardem. Things are going pretty well. Javier Bardem spends most of his time trying to write, and Mother spends every ounce of her day renovating their home and listening to it breathe new life into hers. That all changes when a random couple shows up that are played by Ed Harris and Michelle Pfeiffer. These two, they kind of throw a bit of a wrench into Mother's seemingly happy home life. From there, things spiral out of control, and that's really all I can say about the plot without spoiling anything. So, like I said, listen after the show for spoilery thoughts. As for the movie, man, Darren Aronofsky he's got a mixed track record for me. For every wrestler, A Requiem for a Dream, there's Noah or The Fountain, which definitely starts with an F. For the first hour of this film, I was absolutely engrossed. I thought it was great. The first hour, great. He shot the film in such a unique way that Jennifer Lawrence really feels present and kind of the center of our universe as we're there with him. The camera then basically follows her everywhere, and I think it was estimated that the film spends at least an hour on Lawrence's face in close-up, which is a big win for me. But it's also it's a really cool and unique way to shoot a film and make you feel like she's the most important thing in the frame. It's very interesting and also a little unsettling. And then the first hour passes. And then you kind of start to see what Aronofsky's going for, his allegories, his metaphors. They come pouring in like a flood of artistic pretension, and it washes away any goodwill the film had going for it. At the end of my showing, I can't make this up, the movie was booed. Literally booed. I can't remember the last time I saw or heard a movie booed and disliked that much by an audience. Now, I'm not with them, guys. I didn't hate the movie. I just didn't like it.
Are you sure? Because I heard you texted me right after you got out of the movie, and it sounded like you hated it.
I hated the direction. I mean, I kind of thought it was going that way, but my fingers were crossed it wasn't going that way because I thought, man, this is so – the guy has a message, and instead of being subtle about it, like he did the first hour is very subtle, and I thought he handled that well. And then the second hour happens, and it's like he takes a message, and he just hits it, the hammer on the nail, man, so hard, so many times. Some of the direction, sleek and engaging. I really enjoyed it for the first hour. And all the performances were strong. Specifically, Jennifer Lawrence. I thought she was great. But this wastes her entire performance because the story is so weak. It's so preachy. It's almost offensive to me. No, honestly, it is offensive to me. It reeks of pompous arrogance and it kills everything else it had going for it. I honestly think Mother's biggest crime is that by the end, it felt like the director had contempt for both mankind and his own audience. And that is not a good thing for a movie. Now, some people might say I didn't get it. Oh, I got it. I just didn't want it. So if $10 is the full price of admission, I'm going to give it $4, and that's solely for that first hour and the performances within.
You know, I can't remember the last time I was in a movie where people audibly booed, but I remember at the end of Nocturnal Animals where there was like a groan throughout the entire theater.
Well, see, you know what? I'll talk more about it in the spoiler, but I will say marketing probably affected it somewhat because some of the marketing is marketing it like a horror movie and or a thriller, and it is neither one of those things. It is not a thriller. It is not a horror movie, period. There's no debate about it. It is just not. So if you're going in expecting like a home invasion thriller or something like that, that is not what this movie is, but it is being marketed that way. It's something else. It is a unique story. It's a different way to look at it, but it is more art than movie. So it's really about how you perceive that art. I'll talk about it more afterward. I don't want to. It's really hard to say without spoiling it. So American Vandal, John, tell me about American Vandal.
All right. So American Vandal is a true crime satire that just dropped this last weekend on Netflix. And the crime is pretty simple. It's they want to find out who drew 27 dicks on 27 cars. The school has gone ahead and expelled their number one suspect with very little in the way of evidence to do so. But you have Peter Maldonado. He's a kid who works in the AV group, and he does the news for the school. And he thinks there's a reason why to believe that the school's number one suspect, which is Dylan, did not do this crime. I was actually surprised by this whole show. It is very much just like any sort of true crime thing you can find out there. But what you need to remember is that this is not a real story. This is not a real thing. These kids are all actors. And I guarantee you're going to forget at least 5 times that this is not a real thing. And you're going to want to know who drew the damn dicks. The production of it is just like anything you've seen in how to Make a Murderer. So you've got long sprawling shots with a drone over a school. You got dead eye in the camera staring for long periods of time. You got a couple of kids trying to figure out what paint can splatter looks like. I mean, everything is here. It's a fun show. It takes its premise, which is ridiculous, but it takes it very serious and gives you something that, yeah, you can laugh and you can have a good time, but you will want to try to put together this crime as well. I think that it has everything that a true crime has, which means that it has its ups, its downs. The pacing is just like a true crime show or documentary, and they executed it perfectly. So if $10 full price of admission, I gave this one $8.
Holy I've gone cow. Ahead.
Yeah, it's really good. I've gone ahead and looked through some of the comments that some of our listeners put on my review that I have up on the website, and like listeners are saying the same sort of things I did, that they're sitting there trying to figure out who did the crime, and they have to remind themselves that this is just a show, and it's not real, and it's hysterical. I promise you, it's a lot of fun. If you don't like it, I'm sorry. I might have oversold it, but I really enjoyed it because I'm a huge true crime buff, but I also wanted something that made me happy and made me smile and made me laugh. And this definitely did those without a tongue-in-cheek attitude about it.
I like it.
And yeah, it's just, there's no pratfalls or anything like that. It takes itself very serious, but still delivers on the laughs.
So do they do like cliffhangers at the end of each episode like they do in those shows? Like you got to watch the next one.
Oh, yeah, they do. You finish the episode and it's like they drop a bomb that I'm laughing because of the one I just thought of. But they drop a bomb at the end of the episode and then you have to watch the next episode to figure out what goes on, what that's all about. And then they wait. They don't even go right into it when the next episode starts. They do a couple other things and then they go into the bomb they dropped. So, yeah, they do exactly that.
Hmm.
All right.
I'm so intrigued by that show.
Yeah, I want to. That's on Netflix, right? It's all on Netflix?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. All on Netflix. Eight episodes. They're all about a half hour long. So it's an easy watch.
And is there an unmasking? Like, don't tell me anymore. Just yes or no. Do you find out who drew the dicks?
No.
Oh, that's even more interesting.
So there's no payoff, or is there a payoff in another fashion?
There's another payoff. There's got to be. It's a true crime show where you're supposed to be left like, I think I know who it was, right? One of those deals.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You do whatever. Yeah.
You do you, Scotty C. All right, let's go to new releases and we'll try to get through these pretty quick. I know the show's going a little long, but I don't care. All right, John, what's coming out on what is it? What is Friday? The 22nd.
22nd?
Yeah.
All right, 22nd. So up first we have friend request. A popular college student graciously accepts a social outcast online friend request, but soon finds herself fighting a demonic presence that wants to make her lonely by killing off her closest friends. This stars Alicia Denob Carey, William Mosley, and Connor Paolo. Up next, we have Kingsman, the Golden Circle. With their headquarters destroyed and the world is held at hostage, the Kingsman's journey leads them to discovery of an allied spy organization in the U.S. These two elite secret organizations must band together to defeat a common enemy. Taron Egerton returns, Mark Strong, and Julianne Moore is in this one, with a few other people that I'm sure everyone's going to enjoy.
Pedro Pascal.
Mm-hmm. Pedro Pascal, Rooster Cogburn. Channing Tatum. I wasn't going to call him by his real name because Aaron would just correct me to say Rooster Cogburn anyways.
That's true.
And then we have Lego Ninjago.
I got corrected about that one from my buddy Tyler this weekend because his kids apparently watched it. He's like, I said Ninja Go Go, and he's like, no, Ninjago. No, oh, okay. All right.
The battle for Ninjago City calls for young Master Builder Lloyd, aka Green Ninja.
No, Lloyd. Lloyd. Haven't seen the trailer? Ah.
Wow.
You're a jackass. That makes me laugh every time I see the trailer. Dad? Lloyd? I think it's funny. Shut up. Big Bang Theory all over again.
You're in a world all by yourself right now.
Oh.
Come on, tell me about Ninja Go.
All right. Well, yeah, they're led by Master Wu, who I think is Jackie Chan. You know, you get it. It's all a whole bunch. Yeah, it's a whole bunch of stuff. So we have Jackie Chan, Dave Franco, Fred Armisen, Kumail Nanjiani, and Michael Pena starring in this one. Do you guys have a pick for this week or what?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's obviously Kingsman, but I have to admit, as if you couldn't tell already, I think the Lego Ninjago movie looks really funny. And I wish I had nieces and nephews to take them to because I think it looks great.
Yeah.
I know nothing about Ninjago.
I know Go-Go. I'm not interested in that one at all.
You're interested in My Little Pony.
Don't judge me, Scott. Ninjago. Don't judge me. All right.
Big Bang Theory all over again.
I'm curious. I know. We just had it all over again. It feels such like a circle of
life. Doesn't make any sense. No way do I want to see a Lego movie that looks hilarious, but man, My Little Ponies, I am there.
You want my honest answer? Lego Batman wasn't that good. So
I agree with you. I did not like Lego Batman.
That's why I'm not interested. It's going to be one of those. Once I hear from people I know that really love the Lego movie, but just were kind of meh on Lego Batman, that they really like it, then I'll be excited for it. But as of right now, I'm not. So that's my honest truth. And Unfriended 2 or Friend Request, whatever, it's... No, I saw that movie last year, and Kingsman, the only thing that bugs me is all I think about is Golden Compass. I don't know why. I think that title was a bad choice.
Get people riding a bear in the snow.
Yeah, I'm like, why aren't they riding a bear with a lasso? I don't understand. What the hell's going on? So no, I'm looking. It's Matthew Vaughn, man. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. That's my pick.
All right. That's my pick too. And I think Matthew Vaughn this week confirmed that he's doing Man of Steel. So
no, he's I think close to it. Did he confirm it?
I think he confirmed it. I hope so. I don't remember. I should just keep that to myself.
Well, good job, John. Good job. I hope you confirmed to thousands of people that you're wrong. All right.
See, I told you we were going to get back to me being wrong again.
Let's go to video on demand, Scott.
All right, we've got, let's see, three different ones this week. The first comes out on September 22nd. It is called Big Bear. It's about Joe, played by Joey Kern, who reluctantly has his bachelor party, even though his fiance just dumped him for some dude. And it just sounds awesome.
That sounds awesome.
My fiance left me, but we're going to have the bachelor party anyway. I don't think it's a bachelor. Well, I guess it is a bachelor party technically, but it's good to note that it recently Emmy-nominated Pablo Schreiber, who played Porn Stash in Orange is the New Black, is in this movie. So that sounds something like I kind of want to see. Last Rampage on September 22nd, the true story of the infamous prison break of Gary Tyson and Randy Greenwalt from the Arizona State Prison in Florence, Arizona in the summer of 1978. This one stars Heather Graham, who I haven't seen her in a while, Holly Quinn, Robert Patrick, and John Hurd. That's quite a cast. That sounds kind of interesting. I don't know anything about that prison break, but... We had an actual prison break, like in real life, in like the past 20 years. I feel like that always happened in the 70s or 80s.
Oh, yeah. There's been prison breaks.
It's like Georgia every other week.
Oh, is it? Okay. I'm just in the wrong part of the country, apparently.
They keep forgetting to close the gate. Sons of bitches.
It's a conspiracy. And the last one, Infinity Chamber, which comes out on September 26th. A man trapped in an automated prison, prison movie week apparently, a man trapped in an automated prison must outsmart a computer in order to escape and try and find his way back to the outside world that may already be wiped out. That sounds like there's no happy ending to that movie whatsoever. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Well, and that's it.
Well, how about any recent film or TV recommendations, you guys? Is there anything you want to recommend?
Yeah, I got one. And so I know I've gone on the record saying that How I Met Your Mother was a great show with a terrible ending.
Mm-hmm. And I recently, while I was trying to forget that there was a storm coming down on us, I would avoid the news by just binge watching.
By getting drunk and barbecuing.
Yeah. And also watching a whole lot of How I Met Your Mother. So I rewatched the whole series while that storm was coming. And
the whole series?
Yeah, it's, what, half-hour episodes? I mean, 21-minute-long episodes? I can do that.
24 episodes in each season.
Yeah, they're all 21 minutes long.
There are many, many weeks where neither one of you bitches come here with a new movie to talk about, but you can binge-watch shows every single week. Explain to me the math and how that works.
When you got a hurricane, like when you have a hurricane, you can't use a hurricane forever. I want to see you figure out other ways to keep yourself happy. This is the way I kept myself cool and calm.
He'd be fine with it if you rewatch Psych.
Rewatch Psych. I have rewatched Psych, and he hasn't yelled at me for that. Actually, yeah.
See, my point proven right there. There you go. Yeah.
All right, true. Continue with your mantra.
My mantra.
Tantrum. All right, tantrum, so, mantra, whatever. Tomato, tomato.
I've heard it both ways.
well played.
So I know I've gone on record saying that I hate the ending of that show, and I kind of get it now. I'm not mad at it anymore. And yeah, it still is kind of sketchy and weird, but it actually makes sense, I think. And I really have missed that show. I've missed the joy that it has. I missed the fun that it has. I missed those relationships. And I'm glad that I sat down and rewatched it. So it's on Netflix right now. Scott, I think you're rewatching it right now too, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm on season 5, right at the end of season 5. And I'm with you, man. That's a show that consistently makes me laugh out loud, which is funny because I'm usually laying in bed while my wife is sleeping, and I have to like stifle my laughter because it still makes me laugh, even though I've seen it multiple times. It's so good.
It still holds up. It's, you know, it's such a good show.
And Barney is such a horrible person, but you just love watching him for some reason.
Yeah.
Scotty, you got anything to recommend?
Nothing new, but I do have something that's pissing me off this week. Can I talk about that?
Yeah, well, once we get done with recommendations.
Okay, well, you got any recommendations or anything we haven't previously discussed you'd like to share?
Nope. Want to go to Outrage?
You're such a jerk. You're such a jerk.
You know, I did finally see The Mummy.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
How bad was it?
It's okay. I mean.
Oh, I listened to Baywatch.
I listened to Baywatch.
Yeah, I was downstairs playing video games. My wife had a plan upstairs, so I heard her laughing at it. I heard some of the dialogue. It sounded pretty funny.
It is pretty funny. It is pretty funny. You should watch it.
I should have. I was in a mood that night.
Yeah, you were too busy waiting to continue binge watching How I Met Your Mother, apparently.
I was not.
I mean, at the very least, yes, I watched How I Met Your Mother, but I did find time to watch The Mummy, which was mediocre at best, which probably would have been better with a different star at the helm of that one.
Yeah. Hmm. His name weighed it down a little bit.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with him. It's just that, like, I find it creepy to see a 52-year-old man flirting with 30-year-old women. I don't know what happened to me.
I'm fine. I'm fine with it. So Scott, let's go to what you think, because I'm just covering my bases for the future. What is your outrage?
I heard some news today about the movie pass that some of us are still waiting on.
Oh boy!
And Kyle Boggs from our community actually messaged me today because he recently got his card in the mail, and he told me that he goes to an AMC theater, and apparently, remember how before. At AMC, you could, whenever you swipe your card, you could also swipe your Stubbs card and still rack up those points. Apparently, according to him, you can't do that anymore. They won't let you use that to stack Stubbs points anymore. And that makes me really angry.
I don't know if that's true.
No?
No. I think there are certain markets where they are trying that, but I just used it like 2 days ago and it worked fine.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So some markets, I think the larger markets, AMC is trying that approach because that's what I told you guys. That's what I thought their concern was. They don't want to be giving out Stubbs points or, you know, their rewards points for people using that card. I kind of get that. I mean, you're kind of getting.
It's double dipping.
It's double dipping. It really is. So, I mean, I get to a degree what their point is, but they're getting paid no matter what, it. So I don't quite understand.
And if that does happen, then I'm fine with it. It's just disappointing because I was, you know, it was nice getting a free bucket of popcorn every $500 I spent at at the theater.
Well, but still, really, you're only paying $10. So it's, you might go at like six tickets. And if you get six tickets in a month, you're still only paying $10.
Oh,
so,
I know. You know, it's fun coming out ahead.
Yeah. All right. I'm sure what he's saying is correct. I'm just saying in our market, it's currently not a problem.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I hadn't used it yet, so I didn't.
So in the face, Kyle Boggs.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Not what I'm saying. I'm just saying maybe your stubs thing wasn't working when you went. I don't know. We'll see. But I do know some markets are doing that. Now I do have some outrage to talk about. You guys care?
I'm listening.
All right. Well,
hold on. Is this where you start talking about Mother?
No, I'm going to do that.
Okay.
In just a minute. Just a minute.
All right.
This is about Devin Faraci. You guys know who Devin Faraci is?
No.
Johnny? This is the guy who was accused of inappropriate behavior assaulting people.
Let me give you some background. Almost about I think it was about a year ago. Devin Faraci, he was a lead critic for Birth, Movies, Death was the website. And it's a popular website. And he was finally relieved of his duties and position after a woman accused him of sexual assault. He technically stepped down. He never acknowledged his guilt. He never also denied his guilt. He just stepped down. He said he quit. Others felt he was forced out, you know, whatever. Then we found out that the Alamo Drafthouse CEO, which owns the site, Tim League, quietly rehired Faraci. And after journalist Kat Arnett, I hope I got the name right, reached out to Tim League to discuss her own issues of being harassed by Faraci, Tim League asked her to keep her accusations private so they could move forward with the BMD brand. And this all only came to light after a former programmer with Fantastic Fest, which is put on by the Alamo Drafthouse, Todd Brown, quit his job after learning that Faraci was going to be part of that event. Okay, now I only bring this up because last week I hopped on my soapbox defending the indie bloggers. You guys remember that? I did that last week.
Right.
Well, John, you probably didn't listen because you weren't part of that episode, so you're like, I don't want to listen to that. But
of course I listened to you.
That's a lie. All right, so I jumped on my soapbox. And I was defending indie bloggers of the world because they built themselves up from scratch. And here we have a group that I previously admired for finally parting ways with this guy. And then you guys have listened to me for weeks, months, years, whatever. You know that most times I try to take the high road. I'm not doing that here. This absolutely disgusts me. The Alamo Drafthouse has been a very noble organization, and it absolutely breaks my heart to know that this place that made waves in June for holding women-only screenings of Wonder Woman, remember that? And told mm-hmm. the haters to shut it because they were being sexist. They rehired an unrepentant scumbag like Faraci. They did. The same people that we were kind of defending, and then, you know, they were telling other people, they were calling them out for being sexist, and these sons of bitches hire him back. And I'm not speaking out of turn. I just want everybody to know. I'm not speaking out of turn. I met him. I met Devin Faraci my first year at South by Southwest. And in a field full of film geeks like myself, having a great time, he was the lone, arrogant jackass, treating everybody as though he was better than every single one of them. This is a guy who once encouraged a journalist to kill himself over a difference of opinion, and also engaged in a troll campaign on another critic over Jessica Jones on Twitter by retweeting jokes about that critic's experience with rape. That's what he's done.
Holy cow.
Yeah, he is a freaking cancer to the film criticism community. A cancer. He's a bully. He's a hypocrite. He used his pulpit to undermine, ridicule, and harass numerous critics, studios, and fans themselves. I've witnessed it firsthand. I'm not exaggerating. This isn't a guy who said something flippant randomly one day. This is a guy who's just every day. He's a pariah. And the reason I'm bringing all that up, saying all that, is the Alamo Drafthouse is supposed to be that theater chain for you and I, for the cinema lovers and all of us. That is their brand to appeal to those of us who love nothing more than hitting the theater with some friends, having a great time. They're the people that I was talking about last week when I hopped on my soapbox. But apparently, they seem to only care about those of us with a dick, and it pisses me off. That's it. Thoughts? Anyone?
Wow, my movie pass stubs thing seems really insignificant now. Like a total first world problem on my end. Yeah. That guy sounds like trash, and I'm with you, man. That's garbage.
I don't even want to acknowledge a human being like that.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am. I feel like if you're that horrible of a person, it drives me crazy that people get famous and get clicks and things for being awful human beings. It's happening in media all over, not just film critics too. It drives me crazy. What happened to like respectable journalism and giving an opinion without trashing other people or trashing somebody's work? Like, just say it's not for you. Say you don't like it. Give some good critique of it. Or if someone disagrees with you, to have an interesting conversation about it, don't use it as an opportunity to tell them to kill themselves or make fun of horrible experiences they had. That's just awful, ridiculous human beings. And I feel like we're getting to a place where that's acceptable and that's applauded by large subsets of our society, and it makes me sick.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I definitely don't want to end the show on a huge down note, which thank God Scott had a great joke there. It's just something I just wanted to bring up because it is something I was on my soapbox last week about these independents, and that's a huge slap in their face to me. Just a huge slap in their face to me. And I'm honestly ashamed of our community, because this is our community, all of us, that even happened. It just makes me sad, I guess.
It does. You got anything brighter that you're pissed off about that we can end with?
Man, you know what? I got my Stubbs points, Kyle. Got them. Free popcorn for me, buddy. What's going on with that?
Don't rub it in, man.
You still got your movie pass, man. Use it. Abuse it. Enjoy it. I'm just kidding. Now, what else? Tell me something good happening.
Me something good.
I got nothing. All right. Join our Facebook group. Tweet us on at BuyPopcorn. Hang tight. I'm going to talk about Mother a little deeper here. After you hear like all the music and everything, then I'll get into spoilers. So that's where you'll hear the Mother talk. So just hang tight if you really want to hear about that. Find other episodes, reviews, and other info at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Our email is feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com, or hit contact in the tab, which you can get if you grab the hoe on the go with our Apple or Android apps. We're also on Spotify, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice. Thank you guys for being here every week, except you, John, because you haven't been here every week because you keep whining about a hurricane.
Right. I mean, you know, that's what life on Geostorm is kind of like.
Are you going to see that movie, or are you going to pass?
I'm going to pass, man. I don't need to see that.
Scott, do you want to mention your other podcast before we go?
I would. Yeah. If you like video games, check out the Gaming Outsider podcast, which is a show that I run once a week. And this week we are talking about Destiny 2, which is a huge game, as well as Metroid Samus Returns and Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite. So if you like games at all, please give us a listen. You can hear us at the same place as you listen to this podcast.
All right. Johnny, anything you want to plug?
You know what? I've been really good about sticking to my Instagram lately, so check me out there on Instagram. Well, I will probably be posting links to other things I do, like my YouTube channel and my Facebook page. My Instagram is rjohn.draws, and YouTube is about the same thing, maybe. I don't know. It sounds like it is. And my Facebook is also facebook.com/rjohndraws.
Okay. And you can find me here, obviously. And remakethismovieright.com, or find Remake This Movie Right on your podcast app of choice. We've got a lot of cool episodes. We just did Hellboy. Flatliners is coming out. They're 9 to 5. Speaking of the 9 to 5 reunion, and that one's there. So definitely check those out. It's where we take an original movie, talk about that, and then we craft our own remake of the film, a remake by fans, capped off with a parody trailer performed by William Henderson. And also, The Blacklist Exposed returns next week, so keep an eye on that. The Academy Award winning Blacklist Exposed. I believe I get a nickel every time I do that, Troy, so pay me, bitch. All right, that's gonna do it for this episode. Remember to stick around if you want to hear a little bit more in-depth talk about Mother. That's coming right after the music. So remember, the next time you head to a theater, to not see Mother, according to the box office, buy popcorn. All right, there's some of you still here. Well, good, because you're just going to hear me talk now. So you guys, I'm going to talk about Mother, and I'm going to get into some spoilers. So if you're afraid of what is coming, you've been pre-warned. All right, so earlier you heard my spoiler-free review. Now here's what all of that means. Apparently, Darren Aronofsky, the director, thought he was being super clever with the way he told the story and sold this movie. Frankly, honestly, I think the marketing really put the audience on the wrong side of this thing. They sold it as a horror movie, a thriller, and it is absolutely none of that. Not even a little bit. It's basically, are you ready? Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. It's an allegory for how man has ruined the planet Earth. Yep, it's a super expensive Al Gore movie. Call it an inconsequential movie, if you will. How's that for a metaphor, Aronofsky? Huh? All right. So a lot of people were kind of confused about, what does all this mean? Some critics have stated that you can honestly take it many different ways. I say, yeah, if you're desperate to make it deeper than it really is, I don't think it's that complicated. Now, I'm not saying that there, you know, you might not have to think about it. You might have to do some research. I don't know. I'm not saying that it's going to snap in your head the second you watch the movie. It clicked for me, but I know Aronofsky, and I know how his movies work. So I was kind of looking for that angle because it's always his angle. It's his thing. So I'm going to break down, according to me anyway, the basics by my point of view. Okay. So according to the Bible, before God created man, there was a paradise. And Jennifer Lawrence is Mother Earth. She's defending a living, breathing organism that she has built into this perfect home that she spends all of her time renovating. Earth. Her husband in the film is God, who out of boredom creates Adam, who's played by Ed Harris, known as only man in the movie, and Eve, known as only woman in the movie, who's played by Michelle Pfeiffer. And they kind of invade her very superficial in a way, but very pristine, perfect world. And they also invade God's personal space, the Garden of Eden, so to speak, you might say, which holds God's special, perfect little crystal, which might be seen as an apple, you might say. Their dueling children are Cain and Abel, and then they bring in all the worshipers who just feed God's, ego, need for adulation. It kind of, you know, that need for worship. So these worshipers, they keep sitting on Mother's unsupported sink. Eventually, they cause those pipes to burst into a flood. God knocks Mother up. And she knows she's pregnant because literally, the very moment she's pregnant, she knows she's pregnant. That's an odd thing, but whatever. She gives birth to Jesus, who is followed by an increasingly obsessive group of fans. Then God demands the baby, waits Mother out, snatches it, tosses it back to the crowd. They snack on Jesus, and then Revelations happens when God decides he's going to try this whole thing over again, and maybe this time we can get it right. That's what happened. That's the way I saw it. I don't think it's that complicated, and I don't think it's nearly as deep as Darren Aronofsky likes to believe it is. I mean, there are some other ways you can take it. You can take it that there's a reference to fame in here. There's a reference to a lot of other different ways. There's a lot of different ways you can look at it. But how I described it is how I see it. And I think it's pretty accurate to what it actually represents. I mean, when you sell the movie as, it's unnerving, you'll never remember, like the ad before It, you'll never forget the time you saw Mother in the theater. Yeah, I probably will, honestly. There's nothing that shocks. And some of the things are there to shock you. Eating the baby, I mean, it was such a reach. And it was so on the nose. Yeah, we get it. You're sacrificing Jesus. Got it. And it was just so on the nose that it distracts you from the story he's telling. It's so on the nose and hammering your freaking head with his nail of his point of view, his message, that he forgets the subtlety that he had a really great focus on for the first hour of the movie. And he just lost it. So he could throw his message home, so he could give you a sermon right there in his pulpit. It ruined everything that he had going for it. And it was really too bad, because it could have been something different. It could have been something special, and it could have been the movie that he thought he was making, that he tells all his friends that he made, but he didn't end up actually making, or at least not with this complete final product. It is not the movie that he seems to think it is. It is not that relevant. It is not that deep. It is not that meaningful. It is just a movie. Just a movie. Now, the first hour, you know, I talked about in my written review, which you can find on the website. I talk about in my written review that they flip the script. Darren Aronofsky flips the script midway and really changes the course of direction. Now, I really mean that in the sense, metaphorically speaking, of how he's playing with audience expectations. And he is very much playing with audience expectations, because the first hour, even though it's not like he's changing the story, because it's all an allegory throughout the entire film, but that first hour is very much playing like a Strangers in the House thriller kind of thing, where there's new people are coming in. What's that going to lead to? You've got the brothers and they're going to spat. Somebody gets killed and leaves her home alone to fend for herself. Mother Earth. I'm sorry, just Mother. And up to that point, it is very much a thriller in the classic sense. And he's playing with audience expectations before he flips the script, in my opinion, to go a more bonkers direction. And that's what I think happens. So here's where the issues come up with Mother. See, the movie barely crossed the fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes, but it did cross it. It was rated fresh by critics. And here's the disconnect. Audiences rated it an F on CinemaScore. An F. And what CinemaScore is, and I should explain it, it's a way to rate films based on immediate audience reactions. So they wait outside a theater and ask people as they exit and what they thought of the movie, and those people said it's an F. For perspective, only 19 films have ever, I believe that's the number, have ever received an F CinemaScore. 19. There are like 19 movies released last weekend. So that number is pretty significant. This is really, really bad for audience response. And that's not to say you can't enjoy the film. Obviously, some critics did, and some fans are vehemently defending the film. They're saying, hey, it's great. You just didn't get it. I'm just saying they're the minority this time around. They absolutely are. This is one of those things where there is such a disconnect between critics and audiences on this movie that you can't just say that there isn't a reason for it. There's a reason for it, man. It just wasn't well done. And Paramount wasn't happy that their movie was a floppo, and I get that. And they actually released a statement to the Hollywood Reporter saying the following. This is a quote. This movie is very audacious and brave. You were talking about a director at the top of his game and an actress at the top of her game. They made a movie that was intended to be bold. This is what Megan Colligan from Paramount Worldwide, president of marketing, she said. Everyone wants original filmmaking, and everyone celebrates Netflix when they tell a story no one else wants to tell. This is our version. We don't want all movies to be safe, and it's okay if some people don't like it. Well, the problem, Megan, is that most people aren't liking it. And statements like that sure don't help much, man. If you want art to stand on its own, then don't release statements to try to justify it. Art just is. It doesn't need a non-apology. And to say everyone celebrates Netflix when they tell a story no one else wants to tell completely ignores the fact that sometimes the stories aren't very good. Mother isn't either. It's just a fact. Now, and I can say that at this point. It's a fact. Audiences feel Mother is bad. Now, I've gone on record. I haven't loved everything Aronofsky has done. And my biggest problem with his work, and with this film in particular, which this film illustrates exactly what my problem with him as a filmmaker is. I think he has a very keen eye. I think he is very astute in his filmmaking skills. And he could make a great movie. I have no doubt about it. But he's too in love with himself. And he thinks he's the smartest guy in every room he walks into. It's evident to me when I hear him in interviews. He feel like he's on an elevated playing field. You know, he's in the majors, we're all in the minors, and we're just trying to keep up. I don't think the movie's that smart. I'm sorry. Many people I know that also are on that elevated plane don't think that the movie's that smart. It's not that complicated. If you enjoyed it, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm just telling you what I feel and what I took from the movie. It feels very pretentious. That word comes up so much in conversation about this movie, pretentious. It comes up all the time. Sometimes things just are. And when a director has work where that word comes up enough times, you have to say, you know what? Maybe it's true. Now, Darren Aronofsky, you know, when people have been asking him questions, a lot of things have come up. And one of the most important ones is, what is the yellow liquid that Jennifer Lawrence is drinking throughout the movie? You know, what is it that makes her at peace or allows her to rest? And he says, I will never answer what Jenna's drinking. That secret I will take to the grave. That to me is another, like, I mean, I get it, filmmaker protecting his Vision. But come on, man. I mean, she's sucking down sunshine, right? I mean, that's pretty obvious to me. But, you know, whatever. It's sunshine in a bottle. Whatever it is, Mother is really dividing audiences, but it's not really dividing them as much as I thought it would be. It's more mostly in one camp and then some in the others. And I guess the question I want to leave you guys with is, why is this one such a disconnect? Is it because of hammering home the climate change argument? Is it because it's hammering home a biblical argument? I mean, he's a devout atheist. This is the second or third time he's touched on religion to a major degree. And I think you'd be kidding yourself if you don't think there's a Bible allegory here. It's very much very prominent. I mean, it's so on the nose. I mean, Pennywise could be wearing this shit. So what is causing the disconnect? Some critics, most critics on average enjoyed it. Most audiences on average hated it. And I don't use that term loosely. I mean, an F pretty much says they hated it. Why such a disconnect with this movie? And if you've seen it, if you actually have some thought on this, I'm really curious. Make sure to go to our Facebook group or email us, whatever, and just let me know your thoughts. I'm kind of curious what you guys thought and why you think that disconnect exists. It's very fascinating to me because rarely do you get a movie that causes that kind of disconnect. And I do think there's something to be said for audiences are tired of feeling talked down to. And this movie thinks it's so smart, but it's really not. So I think some audiences are taking it that way. And like I said earlier, it was booed. I can't remember the last time a movie was booed. And while I didn't think it was hate material, I totally get why people were unhappy. I totally get it. That's all I wanted to say. I kind of wanted to share my thoughts about Mother and leave you with them and ask you guys one more time. What do you think that disconnect is? Let me know your thoughts or hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, wherever. I don't care. I'm just kind of curious why you think that difference is there. All right. Thanks, guys. And I hope if you did enjoy the movie, I'm glad you enjoyed it. If you didn't enjoy it, I'm sorry you didn't. But sometimes movies you don't enjoy are great for conversation starters. They don't always have to be anger and vitriol fueled. Sometimes they're just great conversation sparkers to get you talking about either deeper issues, filmmaking itself, maybe the process, or just the thematic material at play. And that's the good that I'm getting from it. Now, some people will say, all movies that do that are better than you think they are. No, sometimes it's just, I mean, The Room sparks a similar conversation between people. So I'm not going to sit there and say that this movie is better than it is. It's not that good to me. But some people are enjoying it. And I think it's important to understand what that disconnect is and why they enjoy it and we don't. So ask yourself that question or ask your fellow film goers that question and let me know if you have any thoughts. All right, guys. Thanks again for listening. I hope you didn't mind me just wandering here aimlessly with my own inner monologue. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope I got some points across. And maybe you saw it differently. I'll look forward to some comments. All right. Take care. And remember, the next time you head to the theater, buy some popcorn. Which is obviously a metaphor for recycling. Take care, guys.